as dark as grief, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lying deep inside your subconscious. It's time for a big scary show.
Hi, this is Amber Johnson of the Dent Schoolhouse and BAM Effects, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hey there, this is RJ Hattie from Space Off, and you are listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hey everybody out in Radio Land, this is Matthew Flagler from the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference, and you are listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is John Miore. I'm from 16 different zombie movies, including 2004's Dawn of the Dead and Land of the Dead and Survival of the Dead, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
You're listening to the Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
This week on an all-new Big Scary Show. With convention season upon us, we head north of the border to talk all things Canadian as Matthew Flagler, creator of the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference, sits down and talks all things haunted in the land of moose, Tim Hortons, and hockey, eh? We also sit down with Canadian actor John Migliore to discuss his career as one of the most prolific zombie actors of our time. Storm brings us a weekly rant in a Haunt Minute. The unknown scare actor makes you face your fears. Is there a fear of Canadians? The haunt rocker, who incidentally was born in Canada, spins some special tunes. Sorry, no Rush or Loverboy this show. The Round Table of Terror discusses makeup in the haunt industry with two guests who've both been on the show before, including one of our favorites. Badger brings you deadline news. All this, plus more, only on The Big Scary Show, eh?
Stop the presses. We have some breaking news.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, as the announcement said, we do have some breaking news regarding the Midwest Haunters Convention. And as always, hopefully you will hear it first here on The Big Scary Show. Now, this news is so big, I can't even begin to tell you what it is. So we decided to go to the source and our go-to guy when it comes to all things Midwest Haunters Convention. We have on the line Mr. Kelly Collins up in Columbus, Ohio, one of the co-organizers of MHC. Kelly, are you there?
I am here, Badger.
Great. Kelly, I hope you're doing well. I know you're excited to talk about this. I understand if you go to the Midwest Haunters Convention and you get there on Friday, you better get there early in the day. Is that correct?
Well, there's some awesome things happening on Friday. You know, our convention's always been a Saturday-Sunday trade show type of, you know, convention with parties and everything.
Yep.
But Fridays have been getting more exciting over the last couple of years. And this year, Friday is the day you want to. If you have to work on Friday, you want to make sure and take a vacation day, because our Friday is just going to kick ass. I'm allowed to say that word, right?
You are allowed to say that. Just keep it PG-13 the rest of the time.
Okay. You ready to hear it?
All right. Go, hit me now.
Hit you now. Okay, well, the day starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. And starting then, we're going to have a bus leaving the Hyatt, and it's going to head up for a paranormal ghost hunters tour. Now, we did this last year, and it was extremely successful. We filled the first bus 3 months before the show. We had our bus was sold out.
So I believe one of our co-hosts, Jerry Vane, was on that last year and actually had an experience.
Okay. We heard some people did on the tour, because we are going to two of the most haunted buildings in the state of Ohio. In fact, the prison, the Mansfield Reformatory Prison, some people believe it is the most haunted building in the entire country.
Wow.
And it's not uncommon at all to go there and actually feel or see something. So anyhow, that's just some of the news, and that's something that happened before, so that's not the breaking news. That's going to happen.
That's big news in and of itself there, Kelly.
That is exciting news, and we just started selling it today. So the tickets for the Paranormal Bus Tour start today. You can go on our website and get your tickets, and there's only 50 tickets. That's it. One bus, and we're done.
So okay. If you're hearing this right now, you need to go to the website and get your tickets now, because it will sell out.
Oh, yeah. Last year, it was so funny, 3 months before the show, we sold that trip out. So, and I can't do more. That's all they can accommodate. So,
wow.
So anyhow, I'm going to talk to you more about that. Next up on the agenda, and I'm still finalizing details on this next topic. However, this is really exciting. Okay, the next big news is a workshop that's going to be held on Friday. And I'm sure you're familiar with the name Stuart Smith, the Stewardism Divine.
I've heard the name, but I'm not sure why I know that name.
Well, when you own a haunted attraction and you want the best person that does 3D painting, you contact Stuart Smith with Stuartism Design. He paints all over the world. He's been over Dubai, painting in Dubai recently, but he is the best. Stuart is going to teach an all-day workshop on Friday, June 7th at the Midwest Haunters Convention. And the class is limited to 13 people. That's
appropriate.
Yes. Now, you start out, your first 2 hours are going to be classroom, where he explains the theory of painting in 3D. And then you take an hour break for lunch. You're going to reconvene down at the convention center. We got a special room set up. Everyone in the class is going to paint a design, and with Stuart as a coach. So he's going to walk you through it, and everybody's going to leave that class with a phenomenal 8-foot by 8-foot design that they can take with them back to their haunt, or put it in their bedroom or in their living room or wherever they want this 3D design. Everybody's going to get a design to take with them.
That sounds fantastic.
Yes, the class goes until 7 o'clock at night. It's going to be a phenomenal class. So that's not on the website yet. I'm just kind of giving you a sneak peek. It's going to be out there very soon. We'll start selling it. But that one's not ready yet. But we're finalizing details right now. It's going to be
That's why we call it breaking news, Kelly, because you are breaking that here on the Big Scary Show.
Yes. And there's a little more information associated with that, but I'm going to save that to the next time you and I are on the phone. But that's not the end of the good news. The good news just keeps rolling along.
You mean there's more good news?
There is more good news. I also will tell you, Barry's working on the classes now, but he's already got Pat Scher is teaching a class on face painting. He's got Nick Herrera is teaching an airbrush class.
Nick's was on Face Off Season 2, if I recall, and he has taught at your convention on more than one occasion.
He is. He's one of our most popular instructors. People really love working with Nick.
Good guy.
And Alan Hopps is teaching the class. Now, it's a workshop, and I don't know all the details on that. Again, Barry's ironing out all those details now. So keep checking our website, MidwestShow.com. But I'm still not to the big news yet. Badger, it's coming up.
Oh, come on, Kelly. Don't keep me waiting.
So, we got this stuff going on all day. It's a busy day. Comes to the end of the day. Registration, by the way, is from 2 until 6, and we're moving registration this year down to the convention center right outside where the hall is for the trade show. So that goes on Friday, and at 6 o'clock, we're going to have a reception back at the Hyatt, and as the reception kicks off, we took one of the meeting rooms there, and they're going to convert that meeting room into a haunted attraction. It's going to be called Haunt You to Death, an interactive haunting experience hosted by Shutter Productions. Now, wow. You know who runs Cheddar Productions, right?
Would that be Jeff Beck?
That's it, Jeff
Not
Beck.
Not the famous guitarist, but the famous makeup artist.
That's
who
him.
I have taken classes with and worked when the last time he put a haunted attraction during the Masquerade Ball. I worked in his haunt there, too.
Well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to take the haunted attraction, and he's redone the haunted attraction. He's actually teaching. That's one of the other things I forgot to tell you is Jeff is teaching a class on Friday on interactive acting styles.
Nice.
And he's setting up a haunted house inside one of our meeting rooms, and the class that you take on Friday is going to, he's going to be teaching you how to be an actor in different scenes in this haunted attraction. And
excellent.
then Friday night is that haunt is going to be used at the Hyatt to entertain our guests before they get on the bus tour. And it's only for people on the Friday night bus tour. So they'll show their wristband, they'll get to go into this haunt. And Jeff is handpicking from around the country the actors that he wants performing in this haunted attraction. He's going to have 10 actors in there. And he is reaching out. I asked him a couple of names, and I can't confirm any of them with you yet because he has to confirm with them that they're going to be at the convention for Friday. But
you can always tell him I'll be there.
Okay. Well, he's got some people in mind, and I'm sure he'd love to have you as one of them. So,
sure.
But if somebody's interested, they need to reach out to Jeff Beck with Shutter Productions. But I think he's got the people in mind. He's going to be calling them here very shortly. So that's some exciting news because this is going to be in your face, head to toe, full costume character acting. This is before you get on the bus for the Friday night bus tour. So there, let's say you make it through the haunt there. Again, it's called Haunt You to Death, an interactive haunting experience. After you survive through there, you'll probably need to go up to your room, change your underwear. You're going to get in line. You're going to get on the bus. The buses start departing the Hyatt at 8:15, and buses leave every 15 minutes. And you're going to go to Unit 70 Studios. And this is the first in their new building. They moved there about 2 years ago. And they've got the showroom set up. You're going to get to walk in. You're going to get to see their showroom, see the products on display. Then he's going to take you back into the shop. And you're going to get a chance to see where they make all these fantastic props Unit 70 is known for.
Love this.
And he's going to have food and beverages there for you. He wants you to get, it's going to be a full-blown open house. Again, this is only open to people on the bus tour. Speaking of the bus tour, there's only going to be 600 tickets available. And while that may seem like a lot, we sell out every year on our Friday night bus tour. Remember last year we went to the Scaratorium?
Yes, I did.
This year, after we leave Unit 70, we're going to Haunted Hoochie at Dead Acres. Haunted Hoochie is known as the world's most aggressive haunted attraction. Tim May and his wife Cheryl. And he is promising us an unbelievable, unforgettable experience at Dead Acres that night. Haunted Hoochie Dead Acres.
And it's been a while since you've been there. I remember going there maybe 3 years ago, and it was just off the wall. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't want to reveal anything, but they do things that, again, that's why they're known as the world's most aggressive haunted house, because they do things other people would even consider.
I think a lot of people would get arrested if they did things that they do there.
Yeah. Well, that is rated R. So this isn't for the kiddies. If you do go on the bus tour and it's just too much for you to go to Dead Acres, you'll take the bus there and get on the next bus and it'll run you back to the Hyatt. So
and laugh at you all the way back.
Yeah. Well, if you've got kids and you want to see Unit 70, but you don't want to take your kids to Dead Acres because it's just too scary for them.
That's a good point. Didn't even think about that.
Yeah, take the kids back to the Hyatt then. But then, after you finish Dead Acres, come back, you're going to want to change your underwear again. Or their diapers. Think about this. You just come put on your diapers before they start the evening.
Maybe we can get a vendor to supply some at the parking and loading area.
Loading, okay. Hey, they get back to the Hyatt then. First bus gets back to the Hyatt about 11:15, 11:30-ish, something like that. But we're going to have karaoke, as you know we always do. It's a huge hit, karaoke. That'll be going on until 1 a.m. at the Hyatt. We're going to start that at 10, and it goes to 1 a.m. So, man, Friday, pack your energy drinks. Friday is going to be a huge, long day just full of excitement and a great way to kick off the Midwest Honors Convention.
So if I get this right.
I didn't tell you the ticket price. Guess this. I know for a tour like this, you're probably thinking $200.
$229, somewhere in that range.
How about less than $100? about
wait,
you better
more,
yet.
Right? Come on, Kelly, you're joking, right? You can't
how
do
about,
this 100.
Oh, listen to this, Badger. $59. Can you believe that? $59.
Sounds like an infomercial, but wait, there's more, right? Do we get steak knives with this, too? Come on, Kelly, you can't do it for $59.
Can you believe that? $59.
I'm having difficulty.
That includes haunt you to death at the Hyatt. That includes your bus transportation, Unit 70 tour, open house with food and beverages, and Dead Acres, Haunted Hoochie at Dead Acres.
That's a bargain at twice the price.
Oh, my God. Can't believe we're doing it so cheap. That covers everything. You just get on the bus, and at the end of the night, brings you right back to the Hyatt. So that's the big news.
Let me see if I get this right. You're starting about 9 o'clock in the morning, all-day courses in 3D painting. You've got Jeff Beck teaching a half-day workshop on acting, hand-picking actors to work in the haunted attraction, which will be at the social event. Then you're getting people to go on the bus tour to go out to Unit 70 and then to the Hoochie and then back for karaoke all in one day. Am I missing anything?
Man, that's it. Isn't that something?
That is probably the fullest Friday you have ever had.
Yep, without a doubt.
How does one go about purchasing tickets? How does one go about getting all this information? Because we've said a lot here in this brief time. And how does one get information about everything Midwest Haunters?
The simplest thing to do is get on your computer and type in midwestshow.com. That's MIDWESTSHOW, midwestshow.com. And our website's got all the information on it. We've also got a Facebook page, Midwest Haunters Convention, on Facebook, and a lot of the information there, too.
So MidwestShow.com, Facebook/Midwest Haunters Convention for everything Midwest Haunters Convention related going on June. What are those dates in June again?
The convention starts on Friday, June 7th, Saturday, June 8th, and Sunday, June the 9th. And, of course, before the convention is the two-day bus tour, which we covered in a previous phone call.
Yes, we did. If you missed that, you'll have to go to MidwestShow.com and get all that information.
Well, there you go.
Once again, Kelly Collins, you have provided us with a wealth of information here. Every time you've got something new coming up, please be sure and give me a call for the Big Scary Show so we can get it up here on breaking news. I want to thank you again for taking time out of your very busy schedule to call us and let us know about all this fantastic stuff at the Midwest Haunters Convention. Once again, Kelly Collins, thank you so much. Take care. I'm sure we will talk to you very, very soon. Once again, this is Drew Badger with breaking news for the Big Scary Show. And now, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Hello, everybody out there. Drew Badger live once again at the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference here in beautiful Hamilton, Ontario. And I'm speaking with a guy who you may have seen him dead on more than one show, more than one movie. He's been in an awful lot of films as usually one of the creepy, crawly dead guys, probably takes a shot to the head at the end. You never can tell. John Migliore.
Yes.
Or otherwise known as Migliore or Migliore.
Yes.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you very much.
Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in the acting business and how it kind of evolved into being a zombie in how many? 16, 17 different films?
16, 17 is coming up. So I started as a background actor. And even my interest in background acting came simply because a number of my friends were in the X-Men movie, and I thought nothing of it until I saw them all on the screen.
Which X-Men movie?
The very first one.
Ah, okay.
The very first one. And then the following year, they were filming Driven in Toronto, and that's a Sylvester Stallone movie, and I'm a big fan. So I signed up simply to be in a Sylvester Stallone movie, and then after a few years of background, just turned out that four different zombie movies in succession showed up in Toronto. So I was in Dawn of the Dead, followed by Resident Evil Apocalypse, then George A. Romero's Land of the Dead, and finally George A. Romero's Survival of the Dead.
So basically, if there's an Of the Dead movie, you're probably in it.
I certainly wish that that was the case. Absolutely.
And, you know, is there a lucrative career in being a quote-unquote background actor?
I wouldn't call it lucrative, no. It's a fun career. Absolutely. It's something that you get a lot of fulfillment out of. You don't mind skipping a meal now and again. It's not bad.
Well, there's always fresh brains around, right?
Absolutely.
So you're here. You're at the Canadian Haunted Attractions Convention. Third year it's been in existence. Is this your first visit to this one?
It is, yes.
And how's it been treating you so far?
It's great. You know, it's nice meeting people. Everybody's always excited to see you, especially this being Saturday. I always dress up as a zombie on a Saturday at conventions.
The makeup looks great, by the way.
Thank you. Gordo did that. He has his own table just down at the other part of the convention.
Sure. And so you've been meeting some fans. Some people say they recognize you or anything like that?
You know, people say that, but I'm not always sure if they really have seen me or not. I'm kind of like the Where's Waldo of zombie movies. You know, go out there and you'll think you'll see me, and maybe,
well, maybe
you will.
Have you had any kind of a close-up or anything, like a shot to the head type thing or anything that, you know, it would have just zoomed in on you per se? Or have you always been one of those guys where you're in a crowd of like 10 or 15?
No, I would say that more often than not, you can see me pretty clearly. In Zombie Apocalypse Redemption, I actually had my head blown off twice, once in a close-up and once in another scene so that you couldn't quite tell it was the same person. In Survival of the Dead, it's one of my best shots, one of the main characters of the movie is forced to the ground by a group of zombies, and me and two other gentlemen tear this man in half and eat him.
Nice.
Yes, yes.
Is there any kind of special training you have to go to in order to completely dismember somebody like that?
You know, what's funny is there are some shoots where they're very particular about how zombies move and what they do, and they do actually have a zombie teacher who tells you what to expect.
Can you understand them if all they're going is, rah, brains? Oh, it's not a real zombie.
No.
It's a
trainer.
Never
guy.
Mind. I'm sorry. My mistake.
But what's funny is George Romero, who, you know, king godfather of zombie movies, he always made a point of saying on the set that he doesn't like to tell people how to act and how to move. He wants them to find their own inner zombie, because if he tells them how to move, everyone ends up moving kind of the same way and looking the same. So it's nice to see people do different things.
And it's not a choreographed scene from Thriller or anything. It's,
right.
It's just everybody kind of shows up. Well, you know, I do the Charlotte Zombie Walk, and I never tell anybody how to dress. I never tell anybody how to act. And it's amazing that you can get people from just simple face paint to just as elaborate a costume and elaborate as makeup as you can. And everybody moves differently. And I think that's kind of what makes zombie movies so cool, is you don't have that everybody has to shuffle this way or shuffle that way type thing.
Right, absolutely. In fact, I myself have for two or three different movies now taught a zombie movement course as part of my appearance in the movie. I'll have some time to get the zombie cast together and talk to them about it. And George Romero's comment is the one that I always make sure to pass on, that they really should find their own inner zombie.
And boy, how do you train somebody to kind of shuffle along like that?
Well, you know, quite often it's what not to do. I'm a little tired of foot draggers myself. I always make a point of saying, you know, we've seen that an awful lot.
Oh,
you
sure.
know, maybe find something else to do.
Very cool. Have you done any non-zombie type films? Has this turned into a somewhat of an acting type career for you outside the world of horror and zombies?
Well, not so much outside the world of horror, definitely outside of the world of zombies. I'm starting to get other roles where I'm either playing a scientist, I'm a priest in an upcoming movie, and there's still horror movies, but yes, I'm starting to know enough people that I'm getting to expand and do other things.
So what kind of things can we look forward to on the future and coming out at your local Metroplex with grand openings and red carpets and all that?
The movie where I'm a priest is called Deadlines. That'll be filming this summer. And what will be coming out more recently, I would think Detention of the Dead is now in limited release in the States. Plan 9, which is a remake of Plan 9 from Outer Space.
You're in that.
Yes,
awesome.
I am. Wearing the wardrobe I'm wearing right now as we speak.
Oh, fantastic. Which is very elaborate, by the way.
Yes, like a tuxedo zombie or a graveyard zombie, they were calling it.
Well, you got to remember, you know, when you bury somebody at a funeral, you don't bury them in a T-shirt and shorts, but yet you see all these zombies walking around in T-shirts and shorts and baseball caps and things like that. It's like, you didn't come rising out of the grave like that. Well, you know, ugh. So you're in your best suit and tie or tuxedo or whatever you think.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's coming up very soon is Fear Fighter. And Fear Fighter is a little bit of a different thing. It's going to be released on a website called Flixsphere. And the idea of the movie is it's almost 4 hours in length. When you watch it, you'll still see an hour and a half movie. But because it's on the internet, At certain points, the movie will pause and allow you choices of who you want to follow, what characters you want to see killed or not killed. There's actually 176 ways you can watch this movie.
It's like choose your own adventure books you had as a kid.
Absolutely. And now it's as something that you can view on the internet.
Is this a new concept? I've never heard of this applied towards movies. Is this the first one like this, or is this something that's been around?
I think there's been a few small things like this. There was a pizza company ad that did something very similar with zombies a short while ago, but I think this is the absolute first time it's been done as a feature.
And the name of that again was?
It's John Johnson's Fear Fighter.
John Johnson's Fear Fighter. Choose your own adventure on the movies. I can actually see that probably becoming like a big trend at some point for online movies.
I would think so. You know, you have to really embrace new media as an actor. You can't say, well, that's just a web series, or that's just a... All of those things are valid, and all of those things are just going to become more and more popular as time goes on.
Do you ever fear that zombies, or people who are known for doing zombies like yourself, may be replaced by CGI because they can be so much more, shall we say, graphic, and, you know, you can actually take an arm and a leg off without looking like you've had your arm and leg taken off in CGI? Do you ever fear about being replaced by that?
Well, you know, it is a concern. The latest Resident Evil movie was filmed here in the Toronto area, and the one just before the current one was also filmed in Toronto. I couldn't get in there. There were a very small group of people that got in to be zombies, and yet you will see in that movie what looks like hundreds and hundreds of zombies, and they are, in fact, all CGI.
Right. So, you know, it is the trend. But, you know, you can't replace a live actor. I've spoken to people who are stuntmen, and they've talked about whether or not they would ever be replaced by CGI. And, you know, there's always going to be a need for that, hopefully. 50 years from now, nobody can say. But for the meantime, you're enjoying the ride as the man of 1,000 zombie movies at the moment.
You bet. And, you know, sometimes CGI works in your favor as well. There's a scene in Dawn of the Dead where there was about 100 of us, and they just simply moved us around a parking lot with a green screen behind us. So it looks like there's maybe 5,000 zombies in that scene, and I'm sure I'm in that scene about 50 times.
Do you get 50 screen credits for that? Or how does that work with royalties?
If only. Yeah. No, it's just all the same thing, unfortunately.
But John Miore, or Migliore, I wish you nothing but success for the future. I hope there here's to many more zombie films and other forms of acting. Any type of website where fans can view your work or get an idea of what's coming up and hear the latest news?
Yes, my website is www.johnmiore.com, and John Miore is spelled J-O-H-N-M-I-G-L-I-O-R-E. And there what you'll find is, right at the top, links to all the other social media sites. So I've got a Blogger page, I've got Twitter, I've got a YouTube page. So that one kind of hub will bring you to everything.
Well, John Miore, or Migliore, or Miore.com. For all your things zombie film related, it's been a pleasure to speak to you here at the Canadian Haunters Convention. I hope you'll be back. It apparently has been treating everybody here very well, and we're all just having a good time, which is what it's all about.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Absolutely. Once again, Drew Badger live at the Canadian Haunted Attractions Convention in beautiful Hamilton, Ontario. And I am out, eh?
Do you hear that? The asylum is being overrun. It's time to go to Von Caron Productions and check out the insane ensemble. For those troublesome lunatics, they have the commitment coat, a straitjacket designed to keep them restrained. Or, if you're the doctor who likes to experiment, then the psychosurgical coat was made just for you. Go to Von Caron Productions, www.voncaron.com. That's V-O-N-C-H-A-R-O-N, Von Caron Productions. Get there before you too are infected by the madness.
Erie Vaughn and Mike Morantz. Nightmare on the Big Scary Show.
Greetings, mortals, and anything else listening. Welcome to the Big Scary Show's Deadline News. We start out with a bit of sad news regarding Ashmore Estates' haunted attraction. As some of you may have seen on the Big Scary Show's Facebook page and elsewhere, Ashmore Estates in Ashmore, Illinois has suffered major damage from a recent tornado. The owners, Scott the Spookmeister and Tanya Kelly, lost the roof of their building, the clown maze, the concession shed, and a camper. Their family and animals are safe. However, everything must go. They have to immediately sell all costumes, props, software, animations, the solar-powered marquee sign, and all other haunt paraphernalia. If interested in any of this or to find out what they have, please call Scott at 217-512-9499, as they may or may not have power at this time. If you're interested in helping to clean up or clean out the estate when they can get back in there, please call Scott for details and check their Facebook page. I'm sure they'll update it when they can. They do state on Facebook, "Thank you so much. Our grief and shock over these losses is eased by how you, our community of friends and loved ones, are reaching out to us. The Big Scary Show wishes them the very best, and as news comes available, we'll let you know."
Just got an update from Scott the Spookmeister, and we thought we'd pass it along to you now. He says that they've got most of the cleanup done, and now they're starting on a fundraising project to get the money to rebuild the roof of Ashmore Estates. If you would like to get more information or to help with the fundraiser, donate or otherwise, visit www.spookedproductions.blogspot.com. The Big Scary Show will have a link on their Facebook page.
We have some news from the Raisin Hell Ranch Haunted Cornfield. Raisin Hell Ranch Haunted Cornfield in Madera, California, will be participating in this year's Mardi Gras Parade in the Tower District in Fresno, that's in California, on Sunday, February 10th from 12 to 3 p.m. They're recruiting volunteers to become chupacabras and scarecrows for a couple of hours and walk the parade with them. If you'd like to work at the Raisin Hell Ranch in October, this is a great opportunity to let us see your talent. Message them if you'd like to volunteer. The Raisin Hell Ranch is buying lunch. And for more information, visit their Facebook page at facebook.com/Raisin, that's spelled R-A-I-S-I-N, Raisin Hell Ranch Haunted Cornfield. We have a bit of news about the Evil Dead remake hitting theaters a little early. This is courtesy of HorrorBid.com. If you've been dying with anticipation to see the upcoming Evil Dead remake, you're in luck. Bruce Campbell has tweeted that the film will open in theaters 1 week sooner than expected. Producer and former star of the Evil Dead franchise, Bruce Campbell has revealed through his Twitter account that Fede Alvarez's upcoming remake of Sam Raimi's Evil Dead will be pushed up by a week. The original release date was April 12, 2013, but now it'll creep into theaters April 5, 2013. For more information, visit www.horrorbid.com. We have a bit of news from Fright Manor, Indianapolis's scariest haunted house, via Facebook. Quote, "Okay, so I'm getting a little nervous about Fright Manor's Valentine's Day massacre. I feel like love is not in the air, more like blood is in the air. Here's why. I've been talking with some of our monsters and getting ready for next weekend. One real pretty lady that scares for us just got jilted by her boyfriend, and she's not a happy camper. She plans to get even with any male that attends our haunt that even comes close to looking like her ex-boyfriend. She talks about stabbing him 29 times and with a real knife. Also, one of our young guys who's only been married for a year caught his newlywed wife in the arms of another man. Now he swears he will put the blades back in the saws when young men go through Fright Manor. So, is this going to make us too creepy to go through knowing what I just told you? Are a couple of our workers maybe just taking this massacre a little too far? I kind of like it, as long as they don't go too far. I hope you join us on Friday and Saturday, February 15th and 16th from 7:30 to 10 for only $10 a person. Fright Manor Valentine's Day Massacre is located at 2909 South Meridian Street in Indianapolis. If you love scary haunted houses and the color red, tell all of your friends and neighbors to join us. Unquote. For more information, visit facebook.com/FrightManor. We have some news from Arx Mortis at Ghost Hill Haunted Attraction in Killen, Alabama, via Facebook. Quote, that's right, Arx Mortis will be open on February 14th and February 15th for our first annual My Bloody Valentine special event. Gates open at 7 p.m. Tickets are $10 if pre-purchased through TicketLeap or $12 at the door. The top-rated Covington Clinic, 50,000-square-foot indoor haunted attraction, will be open 2 days for this special Valentine's Day event. Nothing says, my heart bleeds for you, like Arx Mortis. These hours will be Thursday, February 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. and Friday, February 15th from 7 to 11 p.m. We hope you have a horrifyingly fabulous Valentine's Day night. Unquote. For more information, visit facebook.com/arxmortis. That's spelled A-R-X-M-O-R-T-I-S. Finally, a bit of news from the Death Yard in Nashville, Tennessee, courtesy of news@bigscaryshow.com. Keep sending in those news items. Death Yard has been designing and creating some of Nashville's best haunts, but now it's time to open their own, and you can help. They've started a fundraising campaign to help finance their very own haunted attraction. You can visit www.indiegogo.com/deathyardhauntedhouse for information on how you can be a part of this project. Or you can visit their Facebook page at Death Yard Dark Amusement or Twitter at Death Yard Haunt. Please help spread the word, and they thank you for their support. Remember, folks, if you have news about the haunt, horror, or Halloween industry, please send it to us at news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the air. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News. Tired of surfing all over the web to find the latest haunt news? Why sift through hours of those VideoTube channels trying to find the latest how-to videos? Isn't there an easier way? Of course there is! Introducing HauntersDigest.com. With HauntersDigest.com, just one click will put a world of haunt information at your fingertips. From the latest news, to vendor information, to video tutorials. And don't forget the soon-to-be world-famous Haunt Brief, which takes a deeper look into many aspects of the industry. There's even a directory of over 800 haunted attractions, so you can find the right one for you. Still not convinced? There's even columns written by many experts in the industry covering a wide range of topics. Rumor has it a certain member of a particular podcast might even write for HauntersDigest.com. As an extra bonus, you can follow them on Twitter and Facebook. For more information, visit www.HauntersDigest.com today.
And everybody, welcome back to the Big Scary Show, where one of my personal favorite parts of the show is when we get to give away stuff. And, you know, we just had our gruesome giveaway for the month of January. We asked a very specific question. You listened to the show. You sent in your answers to contest at Big Scary Show, and you have the opportunity to win. Well, as of midnight last night, we ended that contest, and we randomly selected a winner from all the entrants, and we might have the potential winner on the line. Let's find out. Potential winner, are you on the line? What is your name and where are you from?
Hello, yes, I am. My name is Stacy Gibbs, and I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
From Atlanta, Georgia. Excellent. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, Stacy, you know how this works. You sent in a possible correct answer to us, and we're about ready to answer or see if you know the answer to the gruesome giveaway question. But I need to ask you a couple of quick questions first. One, did we contact you in any way, shape, or form before the contest was over?
No.
Okay. Have you influenced us in any way, shape, or form in order to get the correct answer and be a winner, you know, sending us money, cash, things like that?
No, definitely not.
Excellent.
I have none of that.
All right. Now, if my memory serves, the question we are asking is, how many conventions is Alan Hopps planning on attending this year, and can you name them?
Yes, I can. There will be five. and they are Transworld, HauntCon Dallas, West Coast Haunters Con, Halloween Extreme, and MHC Midwest Haunters Con. Am I right?
Stacey Gibbs of Atlanta, Georgia, congratulations. You are the winner of the January Bruce. Hey, we like it. You will be receiving in the mail, courtesy of Screamline Studios, an 8-ounce bottle of liquid latex and Jeff Beck's Haunted Makeup DVD. I own a copy of that. It's a fantastic thing. And if you'll just stay on the line for a couple of minutes, we'll get some contact information from you and get that out to you. Do you work in the haunt industry or anything? Anything you'd like to plug?
Well, I actually am working on a horror movie, which I'm a makeup artist, but I do beauty makeup.
And so I'm just kind of
getting into the world of special effects, and I'm working with the Demon's Rook, and that should be coming out sometime in 2013. We're still in post-production.
The Demon's Rook?
Get some help. The Demon's Rook.
Is there a website for that?
Yes. I do believe it is www.thedemonsrook.com.
Thedemonsrook.com. Okay, everybody, look for that coming out sometime at your local multiplex, I'm sure, in 2013. But once again, Stacey Gibb, Atlanta, Georgia, thank you so very much for being on The Big Scary Show. Thank you for listening and being a fan. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, we certainly cannot forget our fine sponsor, Screamline Studios, for providing us with the very best in props, latex, weapons, all sorts of really great things. Be sure to visit ScreamlineStudios.com for everything haunt horror related. Once again, my name is Drew Badger. This is the Gruesome Giveaway, and we are out.
All right, everybody, here we are, Drew Badger Live. Once again, at Days of the Dead in Atlanta, walking down the aisles, looking at all the cool... Oh, my goodness, look who it is. It's Shane Trotter and Dave Harlequin from Stiff Mag
Monster Gun,
one of our great sponsors. How are you guys doing out? What are you guys doing out here at Days of the Dead?
I'm eating cheeseburgers.
It looks like it, you damn...
There's an awesome Greek restaurant across the street.
There is. I had the gyro yesterday. It was great.
Yeah, I just had one. The things are excellent, dude.
Yeah, a little much sauce on it, but it was really good. So you guys are out here, obviously, promoting Stiff Mag and MonsterCon 2013. Yep. First of all, how's Stiff Mag going?
It's getting a lot of response out here. A lot of people flipping through it. The digital edition seems to be taking off really well. A lot of people are going for that just because it is free.
Still looking for free. My copy.
Of which one?
Of both. Anyway, we'll chat later. And what's going on with Monster Gun? Any news you guys can tell us right now? Any surprises?
Well,
sneak peeks? Anything?
We made the televised news in Greenville just a week ago. And
Greenville,
it's
South
spiked,
Carolina.
Yes, South Carolina. It spiked a lot of activity on the Facebook page and the website. Started moving some tickets and some VIP passes. And
excellent.
A couple of vendors have come in on it, and we're actually now, we've sold already 10% of the VIP passes, and we've got a lot of people saying they're going to be getting those over the next 2 weeks.
And you're still 5 months away.
We're still close to six months away, and you're selling out.
Yeah, that's true, end of July. So you're selling out 10% of your VIPs already.
Already.
What would a VIP pass entail at MonsterCon?
Basically, it comes with a package of merchandise. It includes a program book that's printed to the same specifications as our magazine, so it's not just a general Xerox copy information book,
but
like what a lot of other events do. We're actually going for quality on this. It comes with a T-shirt, early admission to the dealer rooms, first chance to enter the performance area for the Friday night parties before the general public is allowed in, so everybody can make sure they do get inside.
Excellent.
In case of fire marshal saying only so many people can come into this room.
Then let the expensive guests get in there first.
The expensive guests get in first, and it also comes with a free autograph from Dave Prowse. So
who would be who now?
Darth Vader.
That is the man responsible for Darth Vader.
Absolutely.
He also
very fine gentleman.
He played the Frankenstein's monster as well as the Wolfman in some of the old Hammer horror films.
Yep.
He was a Minotaur in Doctor Who.
Exactly.
And was in the most famous Benny Hill sketch of all time.
And A Clockwork Orange.
Yes,
the man's just a legend.
He's a great guest. We've had him on the show, an absolute gentleman.
Approaching 80 years old and works harder than most young people I know.
He told me last year he was on the road doing cons close to 50 weeks a year.
Yes.
Now name some of these little 25-year-old actors who do that kind of a schedule.
us, but we're not 25 anymore.
No. Not anymore. I didn't know you were actors either, but that's not the point.
You haven't seen me do a stage show.
Yeah, I hear there's going to be some entertainment with some very interesting stage shows going on.
We've got Purgatory coming from Charlotte. They do more of an adult-themed, fetish-oriented show. We've got Captain and Maybell coming in to do sideshow stunts.
So, your standard fire-breathing, bed of nails, sword-swallowing, yep. Kind of all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, I don't think they'll allow them to do the fire inside the Hilton, but
yeah, they can always go out in the parking lot and entertain the troops.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get them on the roof to blow fireballs off the roof.
Oh, that'd just be sweet.
That would just be a lot of fun.
We just confirmed Alex Vincent from the Child's Play movies.
Alex is a good guy I've had. Yeah. I've talked to
just
him before.
Just confirmed him on the guest list. We're working on...
That was the young Chucky, for those who don't know.
Yep.
Excellent. Ask him about his poetry books. He's a
yeah, he's
quite
actually,
a prolific
he's
writer.
He's also doing a lot of like the music production for Nine Inch Nails, too, mm-hmm. which is just really cool.
We went to Full Sail, so he had a lot of that. He's got a lot of that good stuff going on. So once again, you guys are on our show. They hear our commercials all the time, but I'll give you a chance to give the free plug, and anybody interested in VIP passes or even just getting tickets, if you're a vendor or just want to come down to Greenville, South Carolina, kind of halfway between Charlotte and Atlanta in late July, with 100% humidity and 98-degree weather, which is still beautiful down here in the South. We're
hot
all
outside,
used to it.
But cool inside.
Absolutely.
Yes, we have air
the coolness factor is, oh, yes, that's right. South Carolina just got that, too. I remember.
Yeah.
So anyway, how can they get information, buy tickets, buy vendor booth space, all the good stuff that is MonsterCon and StiffMag?
The easiest way is to go straight to our website. It's monstercon.org. That's where everything that we have confirmed is being listed. We are starting to get tight on space on vendors, so if there's vendors interested in doing this con that are thinking about it, don't wait much longer, because the artist tables sold out within a month, and
wow,
the vendor tables are expected to sell out within this month. So it's something that they really want to jump on. Don't underestimate the new con market in Greenville. It's getting consumed fast.
We got a small batch left of the 175 tables too. I mean, saying we got really huge booths for 300, we got smaller booths for 175, so yeah, and we've only got like a handful of the 175 ones left. So.
And of course, the Big Scary Show will get like a school desk out in the corner somewhere so we can promote ourselves.
We're going to try to give you at least like two school desks.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean, we'll at least
we'll get some duct tape, we'll tie it together. And
I requested the ones with the chairs.
Oh, thank you, because my tired legs will appreciate
maybe
that.
Maybe a tricycle. Just
ooh,
for no
nice
reason.
Thank you.
I want
to try. Do I get a little bell that goes ching, ching, ching?
I hope so.
Excellent. Once again, MonsterCon.org, Dave Harlequin and Shane Trotter out here at Days of the Dead, shilling yet another con, which there's nothing wrong with that. This is Drew Badger for the Big Scary Show, and I am out.
If you sing Michael song, Graves, beware of the Big Scary Show.
Make the darkness weep and fall. If you sing this song, lie upon me, all surround me, ragged roads of distance, long lost souls. Go! Go! If you sing my song, and the dead cry all around me, I'll blanket you with wings when you're not strong.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Big Scary Show. And, of course, this is the moment you've all been waiting for, the Round Table of Terror. Now, you know, back way back in the early days of the show, we did have a mask versus makeup roundtable all the way back in episode 4. And with the last show we had, we talked a little bit more in-depth on masks. So in order and in essence of equal time, we've decided to give makeup a little bit of a chance to defend themselves in the mask versus makeup wars going on in the haunt industry. I'm sure it'll solve nothing. This will be a to-be-continued steel cage match with a disqualification or something, but that's what we're all about, steel cage matches. No, actually, we're talking makeup here. And in order to talk makeup, first of all, we had to get somebody who was there back in episode 4. So we contacted our good friend Amber Johnson. Are you there, Amber?
I'm here. Hi, guys.
I believe you are a makeup artist for the Dent Schoolhouse in Cincinnati. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Excellent. It's been a while, but it's good to talk to you again. And
well,
of course,
thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. And, of course, when the Big Scary Show talks makeup, no one talks it better than very good friend of the show and internationally known world sensation, Mr. R.J. Hetty from Hit Sensation Sci-Fi Space Off Season 2. R.J., all the way up in Charleston, West Virginia. How you doing, my friend?
That boy, you were laying it on thick, weren't you, then?
Oh, you would expect nothing else from us, right?
That's why I keep doing your show, because you do lay it on thick, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Everyone's got an ego to feed.
Yes, exactly.
And as usual, we are joined by our host. Unfortunately, Storm could not make it tonight due to a prior commitment. We will somehow trudge on without him. But we do have the unknown scare actor.
I am now the master of fear. Bow down before me.
And Jerry Bain, the hot rocker out in Vegas.
I'm just here.
My name is Drew Badger. I'm down in Charlotte. This is Big Scary Show's Round Table of Terror, and we are talking makeup in the haunt industry. And I guess I'll throw this out to the both of you. How did you get started as a makeup artist, or what made you decide one day that you wanted to get into the makeup business? Actually, let's go ladies first. So, Amber, how did this all turn into what it is today for you?
Well, you know, it kind of started a long time ago when I was a kid. I, you know, was instantly obsessed with horror movies and really just wanted to know how they did it. And, you know, as I got older, you know, I started kind of playing around with makeup and, you know, not really getting into anything real crazy because I just didn't know how. You know, there wasn't no internet back when I was a kid, so there was really no way to look up a lot of information and really learn how to do some of this stuff unless you find a book. And, you know, I wasn't fortunate enough to be able to do that until just, you know, in the last 10 years. So, you know, I really just, you know, Halloween was always my favorite time of year, and I just started playing around more and more with my makeup and, you know, going to Halloween parties, and people were like, man, your makeup is crazy, or you look scary, or gross, I can't look at you, which is always my favorite. So, you know, it just kind of grew from there, and, you know, within the last few years, I just really decided to focus in on it and realize, you know, this is really where my passion is, and it's what I want to do, and really started working hard on trying to learn how to do some things, and before I knew it, I ended up working on some short films and got in touch with the Dent Schoolhouse and, you know, really wanted to, I knew if I, you know, I'm in Cincinnati, there's not a lot to do around here, and if I figured if there's any one place I'm going to learn how to build my skills is work for a haunted house so I can get better, get faster, and get to meet more people. So that's where I am now and still going.
How about you, RJ?
Well, it's funny you should ask. I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day. I think for me it was a lot more selfish. I just always wanted to have the coolest Halloween costume as a kid, and I liked wearing this stuff. And it's not like it is, like, you know, you were talking about, you know, how things weren't, you know, the internet back then. We didn't have the internet back then. The other thing we didn't have back then was we didn't have all these cool foam prosthetic pieces in plastic sealed bubble containers like we do today, you know. Right? And we didn't have those back then. If you wanted to do that kind of stuff, you wanted to wear that kind of stuff, you had to learn how to make it on your own. And I had always played around with puppetry and creature design. I was more of a puppeteer and more of a character person than a blood and gore kind of a person. And you know, developing a character and developing them, you know, a look for something that, and you can tell from my work, it's very the things that you've seen are all very character oriented. They're all, you know, cartoonish and lighthearted. Nothing's really as deep and dark and scary as it could be. But I think that I was more of a performer myself. So the excuse was I wanted to wear it. So I had to learn how to make it if I wanted to wear it. So I guess that's where that came from. And just the creatures, the puppets, you know, and because it's similar skill sets and similar materials, it just kind of flowed. The progression kind of went from one thing into another. Movies were a very big instrumental part of that for me, you know. So there you go.
Well, let me ask you, too, this question. Have either of you had any formal training, classes, you know, a mentor or anything like that, or is it all self-taught?
In my case, it was all self-taught, with the exception of, if you want to consider formal classes, what they teach up at Midwest, for the Midwest Hunters Convention, you know, that's the closest thing I've taken, plus I've taken Nick and Brian Wolf's, their special effects class. So, you know, that's probably the closest to formal training that I've had.
RJ?
And I started out with a really, really good foundation in theater makeup from my high school teacher. We had a really good performing arts department. In fact, we were performing arts magnet school. So I took all those, you know, artsy-fartsy classes when I was a kid and started from that point. And then I went to school for a couple of years in college, and I was unhappy, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to try and go, see if I can go to a makeup school. And I ended up getting a scholarship to Joe Belasco. I went to Joe Belasco, and after that, it was a very short program, so there's no way you could learn really everything that you needed to learn in the, you know, 10 or 12 weeks that I think I was at Joe Belasco. So it was a good foundation. It was a good, I would equate it to, you know, like you said, taking some classes at Midwest or with Nick and Brian and that kind of thing, and really just being, you know, having it concentrated into one lump sum. But where I really learned the craft was in the materials and the troubleshooting and all that stuff was partly from my theater background, where, you know, you have like, you just have to work with crap, you know. Like, you have to take a turd and make it look awesome, you know, in the theater, because you don't have any money to do anything with. So if you can't make garbage look like it's something that's usable, then you might as well just stay home. That plus the guys in the shop that I worked for Alterian Studios in the late 90s, and just those guys treated me like big brothers. It was probably some of the happiest years of my life I spent with them, and just learning everything. I mean, just like a sponge, just soaked up everything. And so many of the things that I pulled off on the show were a direct correlation to something that I actually had done for them in the shop. So, yeah.
Well, with that being said, and I know that you both are on the opposite side of the coin now, how does it feel to teach other people?
I love teaching other people. I spent the last 10 years as a teacher in that same high school that I grew up in. So it was it's a love of mine to pass on. And when I was younger out in L.A., there was this stigma that nobody wanted to teach you anything. Nobody wanted to pass that knowledge on at that point, because it was, well, if I teach this person, then that's somebody else that can take that job from me. And that was the mentality then. As things have changed over the years, and I went home and moved back here, I realized the mentality now is, oh, computer stuff is kicking our butt. Let's pass this on.
That's exactly right.
They want to pass the torch now. So you see more makeup schools in the L.A. area than you ever have, in New York even, and it's popping up all over. So I think there's been a, you know, the old guard had decided that, you know what, we were kind of stupid. We needed to facilitate this. We needed to encourage these people to carry this on, because without them, then it's going to die completely. Without these young kids, you'll kill it. So I think they finally realized that. And in the process, you know, it could just be guys that couldn't get film jobs and decided to go into teaching, you know, and you know, but for whatever the reason, I'm glad they're doing it. And I think that now it's important. And it's always been important for me to teach. And I always get a big kick out of it when somebody's eyes get really big, or they go, oh, that's really cool, or, you know, and so I like teaching.
Mm-hmm. Amber?
Yeah, same thing for me. You know, I just, this is my, I'm teaching from my, my college. I have a bachelor's in fine arts from the Art Academy of Cincinnati. And a good friend of mine who's teaching a design class in their community education said, hey, why don't you pitch this class? Because it's, you know, it's completely unique and, you know, nobody's done it and nobody's doing it in Cincinnati at all right now, other than, you know, people doing a couple of, like, theatrical classes and such. And, you know, my whole thing was I really wanted to go in and show people how to use some of these different materials, and not necessarily all of it just being a special effects type of thing, but one of my biggest things when I was in college is that, you know, again, not a lot of internet during that time and not really able to seek out the knowledge that I wanted working with different materials. And so I really didn't get to experiment with as many things as I would have liked to, or if I did experiment with something, it probably went really bad. And a lot of times I had some pretty miserably failed art pieces because I would try to mix with, you know, it's not supposed to go with, and it crumbled up and, you know, went to crap. So, you know, that was basically the way I pitched the class to the community education coordinator, that, you know, there's an opportunity for students and other people to really learn how to use these materials that are used for film and for haunted houses and, you know, for Halloween, for anything. And not only learn how to use it for makeup and, you know, that kind of stuff, but also in a more artistic kind of way. And that was really kind of where I was going with it, is that, you know, yeah, you can make these great wounds with latex, or, you know, how to create something with silicone and, you know, how to contour the face with grease base and whatever. But the final result is where the art's going to end up, and be able to take pictures of it or use it for film or, you know, anything along those lines.
Well, I know you had a really talented young lady in one of your classes, in the same class that I was a model for you. It was an interesting class, but that young lady, I mean, she was what, 14 or 15?
Yeah, she was like 15 years old. She was the youngest. And, you know, it really cool because she was so interested in learning everything. And that one day that you came in and we were, I think that was the day we were doing appliances, applying like latex or foam, like, you know, little cuts and bullet holes and things like that. And, you know, she was the only one out of the class that, you know, when she applied it to you and she had trouble, you know, she kind of got stuck and couldn't figure out how to make part of the appliance lay down flat and smooth, that she's like, well, I'm just going to make it work. And she kind of made it look like another little hole or something like that. So she kind of figured out how to work with it, which I thought was really neat, which, you know, really none of the other students really kind of figured out how to do that. So I thought that was really cool. So I hope she does come back for some of the more advanced classes that I plan on teaching, because she was really good.
Okay. Well, I got a question to ask both of you, and we'll start with Amber on this one. Both you guys have both worked in haunts. Movies. What's the big difference between doing a movie and working on a movie or working at a haunt?
I would probably say, I mean, it's always going to depend on what you're trying to create for your haunt and what you're trying to create for a movie. Most of the things that I've worked on, you know, I haven't had an opportunity to do any massive amounts of like mold making, casting, and things like that. So I haven't been able to work on any projects that I can literally really create a creature or something like that. So most of the things that I've worked on have been more along the lines of like a practical effect, something right out of my kit, something that's a little bit more real. A film that my makeup group that I work with, BAMFX, we worked on a zombie film called Revelation Trail. It's coming out sometime soon. And, you know, and we didn't have, you know, crazy appliances. We weren't using, like, those really cool Nimba creation gelatin appliances or anything like that. We had a couple little foam pieces here and there. But for the most part, we had to work really fast, really quick. And we did a lot of this real quick silicone wounds and things that would stick and stay on for hours and hours during the summer when it was hot and humid. And a lot of painted on like wounds and skin using Skin Illustrator and alcohol based paints to make it stay put and wear. And, you know, it, in that respect, you know, those were, that's kind of where my experience goes, is that most of the stuff that I've done for film, it's been, you know, mostly looking more on a realistic side. Whereas for The Haunt, you know, with Dent, you know, we kind of, it's really a hodgepodge. I mean, it's everything from clowns to monsters to, you know, gored up, you know, beaten up girls and victims and whatnot. But, you know, at the same time, we'll have something that looks very realistic. And then sometimes it's like, oh, you know, I kind of put this monster mouth on this person with some, you know, teeth and everything that's all three-dimensional. And, well, today I think I'm going to take it and I'm going to stick it over their eye just because, you know, it looks weird. And you kind of do that for a haunted house because, you know, it's dark and it's just going to look creepy and it's just going to weird people out.
Okay. RJ, what about you?
Well, I think if you were going to ask me what's the difference between a haunted house environment and a film environment, is I would say that the little details. I noticed that when I go into a haunted house situation, you've got maybe 3 makeup artists, 4 makeup artists. But yet, you know, I guess it really depends on the kind of haunted house you're talking about. You're talking about something like Netherworld, or you're talking about, you know, the local JCs that are putting on something at the school. You know, so what are you talking about as far as haunted house? You've got a full spectrum there of, you know, budgets and you know, abilities, and so it's a different ballpark altogether. Film is kind of, and anymore, film is kind of the same way, because anybody today with a decent camera and a computer can make a movie, you know. You don't have to be a Hollywood film with a $10 million, $15 million budget. You can just be a local kid right out of film school and doing something. So, but for me, what I think, like I said, I think it's the details and stuff. The lighting is a lot different in haunted houses. If you've got 3 makeup artists and you've got 75 kids behind those 3 guys waiting for their makeup, well, what are you going to do? You know, are you going to spend a lot of time, you know, building up or putting on an appliance and making it look film ready or film quality? No, you're not going to do that. I really, you know, when I consult, I tell people, get some airbrushes. Learn how to do basic shadows. Throw some blood on. You know what I'm really hip on right now with people is the tattoos. They go on in 2 seconds and it looks cool, and then the kids are out of your face. But you got to get stuff done quickly, and a lot of volume. And you don't have the workforce that you might have on a film. You don't have the budget that you might have on a film. If it's not a cue line performer, if it's not somebody that's in bright light that's right in front of somebody's face, it's a waste of resources, I feel. Get the people in the haunts with the dark lights where you can't see much and they're just jumping out at you anyway. Get those basic shadows and contours and stuff down with the airbrush, freehand some stuff, use some stencils, use some tattoo products, and go. So that would be the big difference for me. You've got a level of detail for film, especially with high-definition film today, that you don't have in a haunted house, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that, do you guys prefer doing the more realistic makeup, or do you guys like doing the kind of the expanding your ideas out and creating something new, whether it be fantasy based or whatever? What which do you guys prefer to do the most?
Well, that's tough because I mean, I like both. However, my full-time job is actually working more in beauty makeup and trying to make people look more, you know, like a better version of themselves and more, you know, balancing out, you know, imperfections and things on the skin and on the face, eyes and whatnot. However, you know, with, you know, in the haunt industry, it's kind of the exact opposite. It's like, how much can I completely wreck you? that's why it's like my favorite thing to do is to, you know, go that polar opposite route and, you know, make them work as look as bad as humanly possible. I love doing that.
I'd say I prefer to create something fantastic other than something realistic. Although, you know, I've done a few of these injury simulation. What do you call them? For the, you know, the paramedics and stuff, the drills and things. And Bree makes her living out of that. Bree from our season makes her living from doing those injury drills. And I've gotten a lot of compliments from the paramedics. Oh, that's exactly what that looks like. That's really good. You did a great job. And you know, so I like doing that. I like getting that kind of feedback from people. If I can fool the paramedics. You know, and the thing of it is, when you're doing injury simulation stuff, thank God, we say thank God, that most people don't have a real point of reference for what something like that looks like. You know, most people aren't, you know, looking up faces of death, and most people aren't, you know, on the internet looking up what injuries look like. Now, some people that go to haunted houses are.
Haunters very well. I'm on sites like that all the time.
But in haunted houses, yeah, but when you're doing the injury drills, then yeah, they don't have that point of reference, so they don't know that. You know, let's just put it this way: it's nice to get that kind of feedback from the professionals that do know what that kind of stuff looks like. I enjoy that, but. Like doing a realistic old age on our season of the show, I'll use that as a point of reference, we had to do realistic makeup, which is something that happens quite frequently for films, but is not not a fanboy draw. In other words, it's not a big gooey alien. It's not a slasher flick. It's not something that people consider cool. But it is one of the more technical and hardest makeups to do, is to age somebody correctly and do it well. You know, a lot of people have done them. That doesn't mean they look good, and it doesn't mean that they're actually anatomically accurate. And we had one of the best in the business who was known for old age, Greg Canham, there and asking questions. I mean, it was really a cool experience for us. Thankfully, the age that I picked, most of my family is now in their 70s, so my older aunts and uncles and whatnot, they're all in that age group. So I had a good point of reference to go from when I was, you know, using an image in my head during the sculpting phase. But, you know, I like that stuff, but again, if you're going to ask me what I like more, I like creating fantasy characters, fantasy creatures, aliens and, you know, goblins and monsters and peaky men with volcano heads, you know, whatever. You know, the weirdest.
RJ, I'd agree. I'd like to see more of that from you too.
Don't forget bellhop.
The weirder, the better.
Hey, I love that bellhop.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you this quick question. Then, for both of you, what is your favorite medium to work in? Do you prefer working in latex? Do you prefer working in foam? What do you guys like to work in the best?
I love silicone. I really do love working with silicone. However, you know, like I said, since I have not had the opportunity to actually do any real casting and so on and have that chance to run foam and actually make that appliance, you know, and that's something is a big goal for me to achieve this year. You know, right now, you know, I can say I could be perfectly happy never touching latex again and doing everything I need to do with, you know, just taking some good old-fashioned skin type from Smooth On and applying, you know, layers upon layers and coloring it and cutting it up and putting things in it. I love working with that stuff because it just doesn't come off and it, you know, looks and moves like skin. I just love it.
Okay.
I think that I like silicone. I think that it definitely has its uses, but it's hard to tell. I think it depends on what I'm working for. or what the eventual goal is. Like, you know, there's some cases, like if you're doing a fat suit, you're not going to make a silicone fat face because it would,
oh God, no.
It would be too much for the actor. It wouldn't stick on. It would be too heavy to hold up. Silicone has a drawback where it is it's beautifully translucent. It does look and move like real skin, but it also doesn't breathe either. So it doesn't breathe like foam does. And, you know, if you've ever been in foam appliances, you know that they're hot, but for as hot as they are, they are still breathing, you know. And if you were to wear a complete facial silicone appliance, you wouldn't get that at all. I mean, it would be like a sauna in there. But I do like foam for that fact. It's light. It's relatively cheap. It's a heck of a lot cheaper than silicone. Again, if you want, I always tell kids when I start off teaching with kids too, is I always teach kids some gelatin prosthetic stuff first, because, you know, for noses or wounds or scars or whatever little thing, because gelatin pieces are really nice because they kind of have the same translucency value that the silicone has. And as the gelatin warms to the texture, to the body temperature of the person wearing it, it starts to soften. So its movement increases the longer you wear it. But also, you know, under hot light situation, will melt right off. So again, you just have to know what environment you're working in. I mean, what are you going to do with it? And what is the piece? So silicone, you know, V was very adamant that we do lizards and things out of silicone, that we wasted a golden opportunity to do these lizard creatures that we did in foam, and because that would have looked cool, she thought. And old age makeups now, definitely, because most old age makeups are very thin appliances, and you literally don't have to paint them that much, because when they go on, the color of the skin comes through them. So that's a really cool plus to using real thin appliances. Something that I really like now are these Bondo appliances that are made with the Bondo gap filler stuff. We used to use it as just gap filler for years. You know, if you had an edge that was chunky or gross and you wanted to, you know, kind of blend it in a little bit better, now they're using this as a Bondo transfer, and these pieces are sticking on all day. They're literally made out of glue, but they have the elasticity, you know, and the tear strength that makes them desirable. Plus, the cool thing about these things is that you can use them and go underwater with them, and there's no separation at all. So, you know, it's a variety of different mediums at this point, and I guess I've rambled, but if you were to ask me what my favorite is, it's hard to say. My favorite is depending on what my environment is, I guess is what my answer would be for that.
I guess the advantage to the Bondo, too, is if anybody gets into a fender bender in the parking lot, you can always whip some of that up and fix it, right?
Well, it's not that kind of Bondo.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not that Bondo. It's a different type of Bondo. It's Bondo in name only, okay?
I just want to remind everybody here that you are listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on The Big Scary Show. We're going to take a really quick break for a very important message, and we will be right back.
It's time to build your undead horde with the best-rated zombie props 2 years in a row. You'll find them at creepycollection.com. Along with the scary creepy clown props, the frozen meat locker props, the deadly doll props, the creepy killer props, and the deadly deal life-size vines. CreepyCollection.com, the online source for all your pro-haunting and animatronic needs. You'll find Creepy Collection props in many venues, from yard haunts to major screen parks to movie production and even crime scene investigation. Featuring FearFlex technology, Creepy Collection is taking the static out of static. For your gore and more, that's Creepy Collection at www.creepycollection.com.
And we are back to The Big Scary Show on our lively discussion on makeup and makeup artists. We have Amber Johnson from Cincinnati, RJ Hattie, not in Hollywood today, but in his hometown of Charleston, West Virginia. We're talking makeup. And I'll throw out this question. As somebody who's been an actor for many, many years, I love grease paint. I use it pretty much, I actually prefer it over airbrushing. But what do you guys prefer? I know most makeup artists would say the convenience of airbrushing outweighs the coolness of grease paint. And frankly, a lot of actors I know like grease paint or like airbrushing over grease paint. What are your guys' opinions about grease paint versus airbrush?
I guess in my case, we don't really use a whole lot of airbrush at Dent. You know, I think it definitely has its time and its place, and it definitely can make things much faster, as RJ was speaking to earlier, you know, to get things done really quick and shading stuff. You know, we don't have an airline where our makeup room is anymore. So, you know, we do everything. It's all grease-based, and or occasionally we might do some, you know, water-based makeups and things too, but 99% of it, we're doing everything with grease base. So, and I do like it. A lot of times I do, depending on what the makeup job is, you know, again, if it's, you know, if I'm using silicone, again, for example, and I'm doing a wound or something on somebody, I'm not going to use grease base necessarily to color it, because that's, it just kind of covers the silicone and it kind of defeats the purpose. Where I would normally use like a Skin Illustrator alcohol based makeup that's nice and translucent, like a watercolor, and layer in my colors that way, and it would, you know, definitely give a bit more of a realistic look. Not to say that I don't still sneak a little grease base in, maybe to make some things look a little darker in some areas, but yeah, for the most part, you know, we're really using more grease base than anything else.
RJ, I know you've kind of sort of got a little connection to airbrushes in particular, but what's your opinion on this?
Well, I mean, when I do makeup, let's put it this way. There's no one product that I use on creating any character. I use everything. I will use rubber mask grease paint. I will use just regular makeup. I will use alcohol-based airbrush makeups. I've gotten away from using PAX paint because the new alcohol makeups are so nice that they do stick to both foam and skin equally as well. So you don't really have to... you don't really have to worry about the, you know, the adhesion to the foam as much as we used to. I do love the alcohol palettes. Those are great for doing thin washes. So, you know, whatever you have, whatever you like, use it. I mean, I use several different products creating my penguin makeup. There's rubber mask grease paint, basic Ben Nye colors, cream colors, and then finished off with some airbrush. So it's a mishmash of everything.
When I see you working at conventions, I just see just every conceivable product on your table. It seems like everything,
yep.
You know, latex to water-based to watermelon to, you know, pretty much everything.
I mean, that's the thing. Because, you know, and that's the thing. I would rather need it and not, I mean, have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And so it makes going places very difficult for me, because I'm one of those people that has to have everything in front of me. You know, with them, especially when you're doing out of the makeups at conventions for the kids and the adults and stuff, and say, well, can you do this? And you go, well, sure, let's think about this for a minute. What do you want? And how ornate do you want it? You know, but, you know, that's fun for me. I like doing that kind of stuff. And it's good to have everything handy, because, you know, it just depends on which direction you go in.
So I hate to ask this, but how big are your makeup kits when you travel or when you're working at schoolhouse, Amber?
Well, I'll guarantee me RJ's is much bigger than mine.
That's really funny that you would say that, Amber, because I was at IMAX this weekend. I just bought another kit. So,
oh, my gosh.
this is the third box now that I'll be lugging around when I go play.
Oh, my.
I've got three boxes.
How fun is that going through airport security?
It's a freaking nightmare. Let me just tell you this, because they don't give a rat's patoot what is in the thing, and they will throw it in, and it comes up those things, boom, 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 twists and turns all around. So I have to really pack everything really well. I even put paper towels and everything inside the kit if there's any empty space so the stuff doesn't toss around. When you travel with an air compressor on an airplane, forget it. They think you've got a bomb. So, you know, it's like, I mean, they just don't get it. And I was going through the airport security. The guy had me stopped over the fact that, you know, it's 3.4 ounces is all you're allowed to take, liquid, right? And that's fine. I had 4-ounce bottles that were literally half or less than half full.
but it was not anywhere near 4 ounces of liquid in the bottle. They stopped me over the fact that it was not a 3.4-ounce bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And made me check everything that was in there. I had to literally unpack my stuff and pack it. It was a nightmare, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a nightmare to get in and out of here with makeup kits.
Yeah, I know my makeup kits, you know, I try so hard to condense it down to the things I think I need the most, and I just start shoving random things in that I think I possibly, oh, God, I forgot baby powder. I don't know why I need it, but I might need it. Or a bar of soap to soak down somebody's head or, you know, something. You know, I bring such a variety of stuff. And I've got to a point now that usually I have a kind of like a makeup bag that is packed with all of my anything that's like a special effect medium, because usually they're flammable, explosive, and whatnot. So I keep all that stuff together because that's a fun cocktail. And then usually I'll have a beauty kit of, you know, just in case if we need a beauty makeup or something like that, I keep all that stuff separate, brushes and whatnot. And then usually then I have a bag that's just full of hair products because I don't do hair, but you know what? Somebody might need a brush or a flat iron. So I'll pack a flat iron and a blow dryer and, you know, all kinds of other random things just because you never, ever know when you need it. So, you know, I usually have three pretty decent, you know, carrying pieces with me at all times, too.
You know, the makeup artist on set, too, is like the apothecary, you know, the pharmacist. You got to have, you know, I've even got, like, Tylenol and razor blades and stuff in there in case people need to, you know, go and shave quickly or somebody's got a headache, somebody needs some chapstick. You have really basic necessities because,
True. You
know, people will come with nothing. And then you've got to work on them. And, you know, I've got towels even, cleansing products, soaps.
Moisturizer.
Like moisturizer. Now, I've got a big old honking jar of Noxzema that I keep in there. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I'm just like, go clean yourself. I ain't got time for this right now. You know, so, come back, sit in the chair when you clean, and then we'll talk. You know, that kind of thing.
Now, if you're sporting a thing of Preparation H in there, we're going to have to have a little bit of a talk about this one.
You want
to
hear something even funnier? The kids really get a kick out of seeing KY and condoms in my makeup kit.
Oh, yes.
They go crazy over that.
You don't
want to know. Trust me. You don't want to know.
Well, you know, there was a when I first started buying the alcohol-based palettes, you know, you can, wherever they sell it from, you know, you can usually buy 99% isopropyl alcohol. And, of course, it's an arm and a leg for a small bottle of it. So I started going to, you know, like hospital, like anything that would, you know, retail hospital supplies and stuff like that. And I had one particular place around the corner for me that I started going in and buying a lot of really random stuff. And I know I totally creeped the lady out. But, you know, I was buying, like, you know, gauze and Ace bandages and this, you know, KY jelly. And I'm like, yeah, this stuff's really cheap. This is awesome. I was so excited. And then, you know, I asked her about purchasing the 99% alcohol. And she's like, no, you can't buy that. And I was like, why? And, you know, I can buy it anywhere else. And she's like, well, you know, drug addicts, they use it for their needles. And I thought, do I look like a drug addict? Like, what? Why won't you sell it to me? And second of all, since when were drug addicts hygienic and want to sanitize their needles? Like, I did not understand it at all.
Not to mention all the KY.
Right.
Well, you know, with the KY and the Prep H.
You know, that Prep H is great for puffy under eyes, so.
You know, I've heard about that recently. My wife told me that, and I just looked at it, and I said, I don't even want to know.
Trust me, Jerry, it absolutely works. Don't ask me how I know, but it works.
Too late.
All right, well, now that we're on the subject of Preparation H, I'm going to take us off that subject. And let me ask both Amber and RJ, what do you consider absolute necessities in your makeup kits?
Wow.
Makeup.
Yeah, makeup. That's a, you know.
There are certain, yeah, let's see.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things like, you know, when I do pack up my kits, there are certain things I ensure that I always have, which would be, you know, all the right brushes and sponges and things I need to apply it with, and, you know, my favorite makeup pieces, you know, alluding back to, like, what I carry, even with the beauty makeup stuff that I carry, a lot of times the lipsticks and stuff like that, I mean, let's be honest, lipsticks really are like a grease base. So, you know, in a pinch, you know, if I didn't maybe have the right shade of a grease or something like that, or something I can't use in my alcohol paints that are too close to the eye, and I need to do a bruised eye, you know, I could do it with a lipstick and get the same, you know, get a great result. And actually, to that too, now one of the things I do pack with me at all times is an orange waterproof lip liner to help neutralize and do tattoo cover-up. Because I'm finding more and more people, you know, are tattooed, and if on set or something like that, you know, most of your regular makeups are not going to do a good enough job to genuinely cover it up. And just throwing in that orange lip liner just knocks the color out, and you can cover up so much easier, and you can cover up, you know, a huge tattoo in a very short amount of time.
It's kind of hard to have that realism of an 18th century Victorian era vampire when you've got a flaming eight ball on your neck or something.
That's right.
And I have seen that, by the way, so that's why I mentioned that specifically.
Nice.
RJ, what about you? What do you consider that some of the things you just absolutely have to have in your kit?
Well, paper towels, because, you know, you never know. Wherever you go, it seems like nobody ever had paper towels around. I always make sure there's some 99% and 91% alcohol. I have to have brush cleaner. I have to have airbrush cleaner. I have to have my brushes. A cape. I would keep a cape in there for the person that's in the chair. An apron for myself or my lab coat, one or two. Gelatin. I always keep gelatin in the kit. I always keep a little bit of latex, a little bit of Prozaid, some spirit gum, some crepe hair. Just staples, you know, those are normal things that you would have in any kit. Some wax, skin illustrators. I do have a couple of Krylon rubber mask grease paint palettes, just for the heck of it. And what else is in there? I just was doing, just going through all this stuff yesterday. Let me think, what else did I say I had to have in there? Oh, Dermashield is a good thing to always have in your kit, too. Or some kind of a barrier cream or something. Some sea breeze or whatever. Although I don't particularly care for sea breeze, because there are some moisturizers in sea breeze. And what you're trying to do when you put down a piece is you're trying to dry the skin as much as possible. So if the skin can stand the alcohol, use the alcohol. If not, then use sea breeze. This depends on the person. I think that's pretty much. Oh. Tweezers, scissors, a Sharpie is always in there too, and some bag, continuity bags. You know, you put people's stuff in the bag and that kind of thing. So you've got like powder puffs and sponges and the colors that you use on those people in those different bags. So you just pull out their bag. I think that's it as far as like what I have to have.
Now don't forget the beer.
Beer, yeah. There's a flask in there, you know. Oh, that's my alcohol. My alcohol. Not alcohol for the... Yeah, that's my alcohol.
Well, in a pinch. I think the other would be okay. Maybe. You'd be on the floor. Convulsing.
So have either of you, throwing this question out to both of you, have either of you had any kind of really unusual things happen while working on somebody? Maybe somebody having an allergic reaction, or maybe RJ saw a rat or something while doing makeup. I know RJ doesn't like rats. Or any kind of good stories or anything really, really unusual while working on an actor or working on somebody at a convention or anything like that.
I can honestly say I haven't had anything really crazy happen. Just the exception of somebody who, you know, didn't know they were allergic to latex, and lo and behold, I covered their whole face in latex, and then, oh, my face is burning. You know, that happened a couple times my first year out at Dent doing makeup, because I'd ask them, hey, are you allergic? And they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, well, let's find out. And before you know it, you know, they're all red and swollen and had to peel all the makeup off. But, yeah, I can't say I've had anything really crazy ever happen in my case.
I think the weirdest thing that ever happened to me was on the show, where the girl, you know, we had just used, you know, had just been tested and everything, freaked out with her old age makeup and had to literally be removed from that makeup. Now, that was an encapsulated silicone piece, too. So there was it's the same material, if you've ever felt a plastic bald cap, it's the same material that a plastic bald cap was made out of that encapsulates that silicone. So it's on the outside and on the inside. Problem was, is during the removal process, the remover ate up all that encapsulation on the inside. So it made the application the second time around very difficult. That was hard. One time when I was a kid, I mean, very, very, very young, just starting out, I was working on a low-budget piece of junk, and the girl that was the star of this piece of cinema, and I use the term loosely, was very fussy, and I did her makeup. And, you know, I don't like doing beauty makeup. I do it if I have to, and it was one of those cases where I had to. And it doesn't mean that I'm bad at it. I can do it, and I can do a fairly decent job at it. And the director came over and said, yeah, that's great. That's exactly what I wanted to look like. And she was very annoyed the entire time. She didn't like what I did to her. She, as soon as he walked away, took her makeup off and proceeded to do it over again in front of me.
Nice.
So that was the most, yeah, like, okay, I'm just going to go sit over here now and have some coffee. So, you know, enjoy yourself. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, let me ask the two of you, who were some of your influences as you got into the business, or perhaps favorite makeup artists?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's a laundry list.
It's hard to point that down. Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Go for it.
You know, the one thing I could say that really probably one of the bigger life-changing things for me was, Rob Bottin, I was 4 years old, and my mother took me to the drive-in to watch the remake of John Carpenter's The Thing, and I was clinging on to the back seat of that car, for my life, because it was the most terrifying thing I had ever seen. And obviously I was 4 years old, so I really didn't know what I was seeing. And if you haven't seen the movie, I would assume you all have seen it. But wow, is it insanely graphic. Yeah, I mean, it's such an insanely graphic movie. And I literally did not watch that movie again until I was 21. It scared me so bad. And, and even when I watched it again, when I was, you know, in my early 20s, I was like, holy cow, this is intense. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And that was a really big kickstart to me. Now, I didn't know who Rob Bottin was at that time. But, you know, that was kind of one of those little things that started it for me, that I was just like, wow, you can make that. Like, you can really just make that. That's not some computerized thing. Like, they made all of that stuff, and that just still to this day blows my mind.
I'd have to say Vina was always a big inspiration to me, because I was always such a huge Tim Burton fan, and she had worked on many of his films. Nick Dudman was really the biggest makeup inspiration, I think, as a kid, because I was so, because I told you, you know, I was more into puppetry and stuff like that, so I was very into the stuff of Jim Henson, Lyle Conway with Little Shop of Horrors, and Stan Winston, Queen Aliens, all these big, huge creatures should have never existed on this earthly plane were being brought to life and being animated in real time, that was fascinating to me. So, but as it started to progress into makeup, was Nick Dudman's Joker makeup on Jack Nicholson when I was a little kid. I was stupid enough to think that there was some way they had actually pinched his mouth together and pulled his face back, because it looked that real to me. I had no clue as a child what they had done to him. And it became an obsession of mine for most of my teenage years to, you know, do the Joker and to, you know, so to pull off his Joker finally with an appliance makeup. I finally learned about appliance makeup as a early 20-something was like a milestone for me. So I felt really accomplished. And in fact, it was the very first foam appliance that I ever made was a Joker mouth, and because of that movie and Nick Dudman's work on it. So Nick Dudman was, the funny thing was, after the show, I contacted him via Facebook, and I said, you know, I explained everything to him. You know, of course, and I was a huge Star Wars fan, too, so all the creatures in Star Wars were just, you know, the Rancor and all these things. Jabba the Hutt as a big puppet, and so Stuart Freeborn, who, you know, had done, you know, Yoda and all these things for Star Wars and stuff, and had trained Nick on the Star Wars films, of course, was... It's like a big circle, and like you said, a huge laundry list of people's names, and it's a small industry, you know, they all know each other and stuff. I got to speak to him, and that was a really an amazing moment for me. I sent him a little Facebook message, and he wrote me back, and it just so happened to be his birthday the day that I wrote him. And he said, "That's an amazing birthday present. Thank you so much for sharing that with me." So I was like, "Well, that's really awesome." You know, I kind of, you know, brightened Nick Dudman's day after he brightened my entire, you know, teenage years because of Batman. And I would also point out, who else would I say? I'd have to say Michael Westmore in Star Trek. Masters of the Universe was a big one for me. And Mike Westmore, that's the Masters of the Universe movie in the Star Trek franchise. And Tony Gardner, who I actually ended up working for as a kid. I mean, I was just really a huge fan of everything that he was doing with Darkman and the Addams Family and those movies that I would watch as a kid. And then Hocus Pocus is one of my all-time favorite movies. And my sister and I would dress up as Billy and Winnie for Halloween for a couple years in a row. Huh?
Who was dressed as who?
Oh, who was dressed as who? Yeah, that's very funny. And it's so funny because of this industry, which is so small, you got to meet all these people eventually and you know, express your appreciation for what they did for your childhood and the memories that they forged. And the cool thing is with them is they get it. You know, they understand how much they mean to you because there was somebody that meant that to them at one point, and that's why they're doing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, they're very appreciative and they're very kind when you reach out to them in that fashion. So I would say to anyone that is listening to this, that is feeling a little sheepish or a little backward about reaching out to someone they think is, oh, no, they're too big for me to talk to, or now I can do that. I would say don't think of that. Think of just saying thank you and that you appreciate their work, and because they would be very kind and they will. I think it all trickles down from Dick Smith because he's such a nice guy, you know, and taught all of these guys to be that way. So to me, I would say, please attempt to contact your idols and tell them, because they will appreciate it, and they will be kind in return.
You notice I did contact you, RJ, for this show, so thank you.
Well, there you go. You are so welcome.
Well, as the clock keeps ticking, we're going to slowly start to wind this down. This question is more for RJ, but also to Amber. I'm assuming you're both watching season 4 of Face Off. And I'll throw this in a couple parts. A, what do you think of the show so far this season? B, if you had any advice for anybody wanting to get into this business, not necessarily getting on a show like Face Off, but just becoming a makeup artist in general, because this show, face it, this show is going to influence a lot of people thinking, well, you know, I could do that. Maybe I'll get into the makeup business. So, you know, what advice would you offer somebody who wants to, A, become a makeup artist, and two, or one, what do you think of the show so far this season?
Well, I think, and here's the thing with you mentioning that, it's already happening. I mean, there are kids that you know me from the shows, these conventions and things, and these kids are already coming up to me and telling me how much they have an inspiration I am to them, and how much they want to do this because of our show and because of us in particular. And while that, as a teacher, someone with a teacher's heart, that's very an amazing feeling. You've touched in just 10 weeks more humans' lives than you could have an entire life in one classroom. That's the awesome part of it. The other part of it is the realization that, oh my God, what have we done? You know, this is not an easy life. And there's not a lot of work out there, but not to discourage someone from following their dreams, but you have to understand that the people that work and work regularly in this business are the best of the very, very best, because the jobs are so few and far between. And when people find you, and they will latch on to you in situations like that, as far as employers are concerned. I think Neil Gaiman said once in a commencement speech, he said, you have to have three things in life. There are three things in life you have to have, but you only need one or two of them. You only need two of them at any given time. You have to do good work, you have to show up on time, and you have to be pleasant to be around. But you only have to have two of those things, because if you do good work and you're pleasant to be around, then people will forgive you if you're late. Okay? But if you're if you're on time and you're pleasant to be around, but your work is kind of they'll kind of forgive you and they'll teach you. Yeah. So there was that whole situation that he went on to. I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but you get where I'm going with it. And it's very true. But so I do want to encourage people to follow their dreams and follow their passion, but I also want to temper that with, this ain't an easy road, and it will take you a very long time to get there. So make sure that you have some other marketable skill other than flipping burgers and digging ditches that you can capitalize on to facilitate a good life for a family, for your children, for whatever, for whoever you need to support aside from yourself. Go to a trade school. There are many different skills in trade schools that apply to the skills that we use. You could be a cosmetologist. You could be a dental tech. You could be an auto body repair person, because we work with so much fiberglass, it's not even funny.
And Bondo.
I mean, there are so many. And Bondo, there you go. We do work with both types of Bondo, actually. So there's that to consider. You need to understand that. And I don't often get a chance to vocalize this to those kids, because, you know, when you come up to somebody at a table, you're there 3-4 minutes at the most, and they just move on to the next person. So you know what I mean? So it's important for me to use you guys in a way that maybe I can say that now through this medium. Please be aware that it's, and I'm sure you can attest to this fact, it's not an easy road. I mean, you can work at a cosmetics counter, but you have to have some kind of something else to pay the bills in the meantime, in the thin times, you know? So I guess that's what I would say to that part of the question. The second part of the question you said was, you know, what do I think of the show so far? We're only 2 episodes in. And I will say this from personal experience and from previous seasons. When you have 14 people at the beginning of each show, it's very, very difficult in an hour to showcase those individuals' work the way it should be presented. You're talking about 150 to 160 hours of footage for each episode that those editors have to go through. So to present everything in the most ideal light for 14 different people is not going to happen. Then the next week, 13 different people. And the week after that, 12 different people. Okay, it's not, it's going to be skewed a little bit, and you have to understand that. So I heard a lot of backlash about this week's past episode. The pressure is really intense. I do feel there are some really amazingly talented individuals on this season. Personally speaking, this week's show was not my favorite. This past week's show was not my favorite in the series history. But you're going to have hiccups like that. It is a no-holds-barred competition where anything can happen. And anything does happen. So, you know, it's like what I said is, this season so far, I'd like to see the rest of what these people are going to pull out. But as the competition dwindles, as people are removed from the show, you're going to be able to focus on those 5 or 6 individuals that are really strong, and you probably will see some really amazing things from those folks. So I would say to keep watching if you're on the fence at this point with this season. How's that?
Sounds great. Any personal favorites? Anybody?
Let me ask you this: was that politically correct enough? Did I teeter the line a little bit there? Or was I?
I would expect no less from you.
I was trying to make sure that I wasn't saying something I shouldn't say.
I may ask you that question at the Renaissance Bar at about 2:30 in the morning and go train
Please
for
do.
It. See if you ask
yes.
Answer it the same way.
Just make sure you've got your recorder.
Pragmatic as usual.
I will have my recorder. Oh, that will be a given.
I would like to be there to hear that myself.
All you might have to do is tune into the show sometime.
Well, what do you think about the show so far? You guys.
Well, which ones?
All of anybody.
You still need Amber to answer the question.
You know, I'm a big fan of the show, period, just because, you know, it's such a great idea, and it's just such a cool concept, and, you know, this isn't something that anybody would have really paid any attention to some, you know, 10 years ago, except for people like us, really. And you're right, you know, what RJ said is, like, you know, you're going to these conventions, and, you know, all these kids are coming up to see you. You know, I have a friend whose little boy, you know, loves that I work Haunted House, and he watches Face Off, and he's like, oh man, can you make me like look like that guy? And I'm like, not really, but maybe one day I'll get good enough and I'll be able to do that. But I could paint you up like a skull and make you look like a zombie. And then he's super excited because he'll look like a zombie. So, you know, I love what the show is doing. I love how it's getting, you know, people out there and exposed to it. I wish I could see, you know, and again, because I want to see the process. I know, you know, I'm friends with Nick Herrera on Facebook, and I see him post things, and he just posted some things that he would like to see differently in the show. And part of it is, you know, time lapses of the makeup and actually seeing what's really going on, because it's true, we only see just this little glimpse of what's happening. And then, you know, then the makeup's done. We're like, oh, hey, oh, great, they got there. That's awesome. Or how they didn't get there and what happened and why they didn't get, you know, something completed. And, you know, I would love to see that kind of stuff. But so far, you know, I like where things are going. And, yeah, there's definitely some people that, and unfortunately I couldn't name any of them by names yet, but, you know, there's a couple people on there that definitely has, like RJ said, you get down to those last five, and, you know, they're going to start cranking out some really crazy cool stuff. The one thing I hope that doesn't happen, which, you know, I said from, you know, the last show, is I always felt like everybody was too nice. And I have a hard time believing that everybody's that nice on such a competitive show. So, you know, and at the same time, it is a TV show, and, you know, I kind of expect somebody to get a little catty or kind of mean, or, you know, oh, they're, you know, their lipstick looks like crap rare or something. You know, I kind of almost expect that in some way. So, you know, I do hope that this season does have a few more dramatic peaks and things in there, too.
I would say this. I'll be quite frank with you. And I, going into this process, had expectations about certain things. And I expected the time. I expected, you know, the living situation. I expected this. I expected that. The one thing I did not expect from any of this were the very strong friendships that we would take away from that, and that we are still carrying on with not just the people that were on our season, but the whole multi-season group as a whole. I feel really blessed that we went through that, you know, trial by fire, so to speak, and came out of it with this fraternity, sorority, whatever you want to call it, of artists that had a unique experience and can relate to each other through that. And we really have had, now, having said that, there are certain folks that are put on this show for a reason. And it ain't their skills. You know, it might be their skills, but it's also, hey, we're artists, we're passionate, we're all alpha types, even deep down inside. But, you know, so when you're passionate about something that you believe in, you're going to stand up for it, true? So there are a lot of episodes that focus on some things that maybe fans are not that cool with. I hear a lot of fans complaining about the drama. But it is still reality television, no matter even if it is a competition show or not. And in order for the show to stay on the air, you have to incorporate some of those elements that are formulaic for reality TV into this area as well. They do it on Top Chef. They do it on Project Runway. Mm-hmm. They do it on all those shows because we're still trying to steal those viewers away from those idiotic shows like, you know, Jersey Shore and
Honey Boo Boo.
Buck Wild. Those types of people. Because those are the types of people that, the Honey Boo Boo, that watch reality TV. It might be a different type of reality TV. It might be reality TV for the artist. But we want those people to watch too, because that ups our numbers. That ensures that we stay on the air, and that ensures that more artists can take advantage of this wonderful experience later on. So without that element, you would just have an instructional video, right? You wouldn't have a show. So they have to do a little bit of that. And I will say this, after watching season one, only at that point was I comfortable in auditioning, because I hate reality TV. I'm not a reality TV person. I won't watch it. But I will watch Face Off. I understand that there's a little bit of drama, and it kind of breaks the tension at some point. Sometimes it causes the tension. But it still has to be there for those reasons. And the only time I understood that, because I was on the side of the fans for the longest time with it, yeah, I hate that crap. It's ridiculous, blah, blah. But from a business standpoint, Hollywood is a business. You know, we want to say we're making art, and that's why we're doing it. But come on, the bottom line is still the bottom line. And if the show doesn't have those viewers, the show doesn't make money, the show doesn't stay on the air. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
I got questions, Gary.
Yeah. I got one. Where do you guys see the makeup industry going in, say, the next 5, 10, whatever years? Do you see a radical shift coming up, or what do you guys see?
I think, you know, RJ kind of touched on it in the beginning there, that, you know, for the longest time it didn't seem like, you know, these artists in Hollywood really wouldn't pass on their trade secrets. And, you know, when, you know, people weren't learning, you know, how to do these makeups and things like that, and, you know, all this CGI became so prominent in film that, you know, people were losing jobs and, you know, it was kind of taken over. And now it's kind of, they're finding that happy medium where these makeups are really important. With the exception maybe Benjamin Button, you know, where they did those combinations of the appropriate amount of CG and an actual, you know, old age, you know, which is a great way to do it. You know, if they were to try to, you know, make that completely old age with all, you know, if it was all CG like that, it wouldn't look good. It wouldn't look right. It just wouldn't feel natural. I think that's, in my opinion, I feel like that's kind of where films are going, that, you know, those jobs are going to be there. And yes, they're going to be few, because it really is going to be for the best of the best. The people who are doing it, the best of the best are the ones that are going to get those jobs. But I feel like, you know, that's where we're going to see film going, is it's going to be that nice mix where you're going to have the makeup and you're going to have the CG.
And you're starting to see it now, like you said, with Benjamin Button. I think the makeup is first and foremost an actor's tool. You know, if you know from yourselves from working in haunted houses, if you've seen the actors transform in front of you and when they look at themselves in a mirror when their makeup is finished, it really aids in the actor's performance for them to be able to see and to be able to feel what they feel like as those characters. So I think that to take that away from the actor, like Pirates of the Caribbean did for so many of those fish dudes and you know, that kind of stuff, was not really a detriment to that film. But I wonder what those performances would have been like had they been different, had he actually had animatronic tentacles and was an actual silicone piece and actually, you know, Davy Jones was actually in the flesh, you know, that kind of thing. I've heard some idle talk about some new things that are happening. I mean, you know, we've got the advent within the last 5 or 6 years of these alcohol palettes and now these Bondo appliances that Christian Tinsley came up with, and everybody's using them now in Walking Dead, and they're using them for old age appliances, and Greg Canham used them in Benjamin Button. What's coming down the pike is really going to be impressive as far as the materials and the procedures entirely to create these makeups are going to change drastically, just from what I've heard over the last, you know, I heard some really interesting things that I probably shouldn't be at liberty to, you know, blurt out on a nationally syndicated podcast, but
we won't
let's
tell
put it
anybody.
This way. Let's put it this way. You're right. Yeah, you're going to see some really cool stuff in the next couple of years. Within the next, I wouldn't even give it 2 years. You're going to see some really cool stuff happening. I'm talking as far as procedural stuff is concerned, and even final mediums. They're making new advancements, smooth on, and and Polytech, they're making new advancements with these silicone products every day. You're going to see some cool stuff happening. So there you go.
Most excellent. We'll definitely be looking for that. But as I said a few moments ago, the clock on the wall continues to tick, and we're going to need to start wrapping this up and winding it down. And as always, we give our guests the opportunity to shill away whatever they need to shill. So we call this area the plugs. Ladies first. Amber, what have you got going on? You know, whatever you've got to plug, any kind of companies or anything like that, be sure and plug in. And go ahead, whatever you've got going on.
Well, of course, I'm going to plug the Dent Schoolhouse Haunted Attraction. You've got to come and check it out. We're definitely very scary. Some of the most best scenery for a haunted house. I mean, it literally looks like you're walking through a movie. So it's really fantastic. And obviously, great makeup. Also, BAMFX, which is my makeup team that I work with, that we, you know, freelance and work on local projects. And you'll have to be able to find us at Horror Hound coming up here in Cincinnati in the next couple of weeks. Forgive me, I don't remember exactly the dates of it. But we actually will be working there as BAMFX, and I believe we'll be working as Dent Schoolhouse as well. But we'll be face painting and doing makeups, doing some special effects stuff, which is going to be pretty cool. And then, of course, Revelation Trail, our zombie film that's going to be coming out very soon. Keep your eyes and ears peeled for that.
Are there any websites for those companies, Dent and BAMFX and all that?
Yes. Dent actually is on FrightSlight.com and also on Facebook. BAMFX is on Facebook. RevelationTrail.com and Revelation Trail on Facebook as well. So you can find us all on there. And then, of course, you can find me, Amber Johnson Tedrick, on Facebook as well, and you can see some of the fun, crazy makeups that I do occasionally.
RJ, I know you have a very busy convention and trade show schedule coming up, as well as several other things. Go ahead and plug away.
I'm still working on finalizing the final schedule for the year, but there are things popping up literally at the last minute all the time. The next place you'd be able to catch me at is going to be Transworld in March, and I'm going to spend all the time between now and then working on some neat new products, some new masks, some new kits. So we'll have some fun things debuting out there. Debuting in October, I had my airbrush debut in October, which is made by the wonderful people at Pache Airbrushes. I couldn't ask for a better sponsor or better people to work with as far as business opportunities are concerned. They're amazing. Their products are 100% American-made right here in good old Chicago, USA, and they guarantee everything for, you know, at least the first year. My airbrush is personally guaranteed for 3 years. So, you know, you're supporting a good American product, too. It's a great airbrush, too. You can buy an airbrush from me if you want one by going to my store online. It's www.radfxstore.com, which is an offshoot of my main website, radfxto.com. You can follow me on Facebook by looking up RJ Hattie on my joining the fan page. I post pics. We have contests every once in a while, giveaways, some fun things. I have a great iPhone app created by our mutual friend, Mr. Charles Perry. At Haunt Apps. He's made a RJ Hattie iPhone app, which is a lot of fun. It's a fun way to follow and keep tabs on me and figure out where I'm at, so you can stalk me if you want to. Twitter's just at RadFXRob. There's all kinds of ways you can find me and follow me and hang out. Working on some classes for some of these upcoming shows. The show list will be finalized in the next couple of weeks. We'll have it up on the fan page, which is facebook.com/RJHattie. You know, just look out for some of the cool things we're coming out with. The store has, you know, some great, I'll have some Endura body paints up there from European Body Art and, other, you know, brands of airbrush makeup, stencils, et cetera, yada, yada. And yeah, I think that's about it.
And when is your app going to be available for Samsung?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to talk to Mr. Terry about that one. I don't.
Yes, you will.
He's been telling me he's been working on an Android version for a while, so get him going with that. I don't know. We'll see. I'll ask him, send him an email, find out what he's up to lately.
You get to work on that, because I don't do the iPhone thing.
You don't do that? Well, you know.
Speaking of that, I just downloaded RJ's app.
Oh, cool.
Well, once again, I would like to thank our two guests, Amber Johnson, over at the Dent Schoolhouse, Cincinnati, Ohio, plus BAMFX as her I guess that would be your special effects company.
Yeah.
As well as many other ventures that you're doing. And, of course, good friend of the show, R.J. Hattie. Good to have you on again. We'll see you at the bar at Transworld. And don't mind that little blinking red light that I may have in your presence after you've had a few of them. Anyway, good to have you guys on the show again. Once again, talking makeup. Hopefully, we'll see some of these really, really cool things that have been hinted on in the next few weeks, months, years. Who knows? And again, I would like to thank, as usual, three of our co-hosts. Again, Storm is MIA tonight. We missed you, Storm. Hope you'll be back on the next one. But we do have the Unknown Scare Actor.
Thank you very much, Amber and RJ. Always a pleasure. Amber, I'm sure I'll see you soon. We'll get together with, you want to do some casting, I've got that silicone kit we still need to work with.
Absolutely.
And RJ, we got to have another beer, and I'll bring you one of the Big Scary Show beers at Midwest this year.
Nice. That's awesome.
His beers are delicious, RJ.
Yeah, I might actually be able to get a cold one this time.
And if we can...
He's in the puppetry class at Transworld, so if you're interested in the puppet aspect of working that into your haunted house, come by and check that out.
Excellent. And, of course, we want to thank the haunt rocker Jerry Vane for joining us tonight.
I've learned a lot from this tonight. Thank you much, both of you.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
My name is Drew Badger. This is the Round Table of Terror, and you only hear it on the Big Scary Show.
Are you a fan of the alternative lifestyle? Do you like horror films and gaming reviews? How about Drop Dead Gorgeous Ladies? If you answered yes, then you need to check out Stiff Mag. Stiff Mag is a bi-monthly horror, alternative culture, and entertainment publication that features our horror film reviews, our tech from the crypt, and graveyard gaming features, killer reading, literary features, music reviews, columns, and of course our beautiful graveyard girls. For subscription information, visit stiffmag.com. That's stiffmag.com.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is The Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
All right, so the other day I'm chatting with the Haunt Rocker, and we're talking about, you know, how we absolutely have no faith in America's youth and how things are going in the future. And, you know, if you wander around a mall on a Friday night, you can absolutely see why. And one of the trends which is just frightening are these kids with the animal hats. And you see them all over the place, and they're in a lot of costume shops this October also. And those are the ones that look like a big fluffy teddy bear is eating your head! And, I mean, they got the ones which, like, hang down so that they're mittens also. They make no sense. They're goofiest things. But kids are out there wearing them on Friday nights, which is just shocking as it is. Among the, you know, grown men wearing tails and ears going out on a Friday night. And we thought we looked horrible in the 80s. But anyway, you know, not one to leave an opportunity sitting on the table. We as haunters need to capitalize on this big time. We need to make zombie hats like this. What would be cooler than a zombie gnawing at somebody's head like that? I mean, it's absolutely perfect. Looks like they got their big mouth on your head. Goes right hand in hand. These zombie om-nom-nom hats are a must-do. So, you know, there are conventions coming up, trade shows coming up. Vendors, get on this. You could sell these things like hotcakes. Haunts will be wanting to have those in the gift shops. People walking around all October. Look, I got my zombie om-nom-nom hat. It would be awesome. So until next time. Every minute scary.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter @BigScaryStorm.
Hey, this is Josh Gates from Sci-Fi's Destination Truth, encouraging you to check out HauntMinute.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to this part of the Big Scary Show, where if you've been listening for the last week or a couple of episodes, you know we're just a hair's breadth away from conference season. Transworld's coming up, and then all the other conferences, the HauntCons and Nationals, the West Coast, Halloween Extreme, and then there's our brothers to the Great White North. We're not talking Doug and Bob McKenzie. We're talking the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference this year in April in Hamilton, Ontario. I was lucky enough to attend it last year, had a great time, was treated like a king, and the man responsible for me being up there is Matthew Flagler, the owner, organizer, big cheese, so to speak, of the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference, and I believe we have Matthew on the line. Matthew, are you there?
I am here, Drew. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Welcome to the Big Scary Show. I know you're familiar with it. You actually have a bit of a trivia history with us. Our first show went live while I was at your convention or your conference last year. Our very first show went up a Friday the 13th, April 13th, first day of your conference. So you've got that footnote in our show's history.
So what you're telling me is you lost your Radio Universe virginity in Canada.
Well, I've been in a... Yeah, we'll talk about that later, but the history in the radio prior to that. But for those folks who have heard about that mysterious land of hockey and Tim Hortons and everybody going, eh, and just being so daggone polite, and of course, you know, snowing 11 or 12 or 13 months out of the year, tell people out there who aren't familiar with it, what is the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference? What's going on? Where is it? How can people get information? And if someone decides to make the trek north, what can they expect?
Well, that's a lot of information to give, and I got a short memory, so I don't even remember what your first question was, but the skinny is that we run this conference. It's much like many of the U.S. Haunted Attractions conferences you mentioned earlier, such as HauntCon, Midwest Haunters, National Haunters, West Coast Haunters, you name it. It's a hybrid of those shows. So we have educational sessions and a trade show and special guests and events. And we hold it in April because by then we're kind of getting thawed out here in Canada. And it's happening in Hamilton, Ontario, which is really close to Toronto. Everybody asks, is that near Toronto? Yes, it is near Toronto. But it's not Toronto. And if they want information, of course, you can go to our website at CanadaHaunts.ca. Not Canada Hunts, CanadaHaunts.ca. Or you can search for us on Facebook. We love to have people join us on Facebook. Just search Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference on Facebook there. But, so we got this bunch of stuff going on, Drew. I know you're right. You were there last year. So, you know, maybe you could field that one. What types of things did you see at the show last year that stand out to you? What went on up there?
There was an awful lot of orange, if I remember correctly. I think as opposed to the basic black of the trade show, I think you had orange curtains, and I thought that was really kind of a little different. But just like you said, I went up and I spoke. I gave a presentation on actor training, which was very well received. Dick Terhune, the voice from Hell, was up there doing a seminar on what he does, and you had some special guests. I believe you had some writers and some actors. John Migliore, who's basically been in pretty much every zombie movie ever, was up there as a special guest, meeting fans and things, and I'm assuming he's from the area. And it was a fun time. I mean, there was a lot of Canadian vendors. There were some United States vendors. And, you know, one of the things I guess we should probably seek into here is, you know, a lot of people wonder, like, do I need a passport to go to Canada or, you know, just to visit? Or if I want to vend, do you need a passport to get there if you're coming in from the Americas or what?
Yeah, well, technically, you don't need a passport to get into Canada, but you're going to need a passport to get back home into America. That's the rules. And it goes the same for us, except we need a passport to visit America and to get back into our own country. Unfortunately, after events of September the 11th of 2001, the world is a changed place, and borders have tightened up, and security's gotten more difficult, but that doesn't mean that the borders aren't open, and it simply means that you have to have a passport, either to get in or to go out of and cross that border one way or the other. So yeah, you definitely should have a passport, although I know you guys have enhanced driver's licenses, and we do also. And you can use that as well, but I'm gonna, if anybody's really interested in specifics, we'll get that on our website, but, or we'll send you an email, but we have had a number of U.S. vendors come up in the past, everybody from Slider Gear to Pumpkin Teeth to Prelude to a Nightmare to the Big Scary Show, and I can't think of anyone of those people that had any problem getting across the U.S. border and back home safely after our show. And so, you know, we want to let folks know that we're working really closely with the Canadian Border Security Agency as well, the CBSA, in order to achieve show recognition for the conference so that our American brethren who are vending coming up can receive a letter on Canadian Border Security Agency letterhead from me identifying them at the border as a vendor at our show, allowing them to come over and exhibit at the show without having to pay duties or tariffs or taxes up front on what they brought bringing with them, and get back home safe and sound. So, you know, I suppose that is a long reply to your question, but...
Well, it just, you know, people, when they say passport, you know, they think it costs hundreds of dollars and takes many, many weeks and things like that, and it does if you're going to get a standard passport, but I do know there's something called a pass card, which the U.S. government started issuing a few years ago that allows free access between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So for anybody interested in coming up to Hamilton to the event, they might want to contact or go on the website, look for pass cards. I believe the State Department website, which I don't know the website right now, but, you know, go look up usstatedepartment.gov site, whatever, and look for pass card. It's just a little wallet-sized document, basically the size of a driver's license, that allows you basically entry into Canada as would a standard passport.
Yeah, and, you know, I said to you once before, Drew, that, you know, I'm sure that the U.S. government is as streamlined as we are in this matter. And my story is that my show last year ended on the 15th of April, and I delivered my passport application to the nearest passport office here on the 16th of April because I got busy planning my show and forgot that I didn't get my passport application in. And I was invited to speak at HauntCon in Pittsburgh, May 7th through 9th, 3 weeks later. But I submitted my application on the 16th of April, and on the 26th of April, or whatever the nearest Monday to that was, I had that passport in my hand and was able to go to a HauntCon. So I'm sure it happens that quick. Nonetheless, you now have about 60 days notice. If you don't want to leave it to the last minute if you can help it, but if you were thinking about coming to this show and checking it out up here, you know, I'm sure that if you put in a passport application tomorrow, you could probably have the passport in your hand in 10 days and come to this show. It's, I'm sure, that easy because we share a common border and our governments have made it clear that we want to have American tourists in our country, and just as you want to have Canadian tourists in yours, and maybe we know more about it than you guys because we tend to go to the U.S. more than you might come to Canada. We, you know, it's a common stereotype, but it is a true one that we like to winter in warm climates. So we flock to South Carolina, Florida, Texas, Arizona, even Alabama and New Orleans, Louisiana to vacation over. But you guys can come up here too, and we promise we'll put all the snow away in time for you to get here.
It did frost while I was there. I just want to go ahead and make that clear. There was frost on the ground, even in April. But that's okay. We do have a unknown scare actor with us who lives up in Ohio, so he's no stranger to cold weather. Unknown scare actor, have you ever traveled to Canada or had any issues or been interested in going up and checking out something like this? And the second part of this is where you're located, I guess, would it be easier to go via Windsor through Detroit, or would it be easier to go through, say, Buffalo, Niagara Falls area?
Well, first of all, to answer, I have been to Canada. It has been a very, very, very long time. As a matter of fact, it has been 30 years since I have been to Canada. Of course, back then, all we needed was a driver's license to get across the border. But I am very interested in going back sometime soon. I don't know if I can go this year, but I certainly would love to come in and possibly vend at maybe next year's event, because I would like to go back and enjoy the country of Canada and all the nice people that I've met down here and up there over the years.
Yeah, and you know, the show is located in Hamilton. It is about 30, 35 minutes, if the traffic's not bad, from Niagara Falls. And, you know, Niagara is, I'm sure, known to most Americans as a tourist place. And so my comment is, I know it's still not summer holidays yet, but, you know, come up to Canada, take in this show, bring the wife and kids, make a little mini vacation out of it. Go to Niagara Falls, go to Toronto, see the CN Tower, largest freestanding structure in the world. You know, make it a week. Do a whole touristy stuff, right?
Heck one, yeah.
One of the things I thought was very interesting or very cool was that when I flew into Buffalo and I got a car and I said, well, I'm going past Niagara Falls, I might as well stop. It was mid-April, and the boats that actually go under the falls, it was the first day that they were open. So, like you said, you can take a little mini vacation and go do that.
Yeah.
But the other thing I was kind of hinting at talking to Unknown Scare Actor was I did not realize that Hamilton is only about 3 hours from Detroit, which it just seems to me Detroit and Buffalo, New York, to me sounds like they're about 25 hours away from each other. It just took half a country or something. But really, they don't seem to be that far apart if you were to make, say, a shortcut through Canada.
Yeah, well, we're from where the Unknown Scare Actor's from. Like when we went to Midwest Haunters Convention, we drove down and crossed at Fort Erie into Buffalo, and then we went down to Erie, Pennsylvania, and then we shot down into Columbus, Ohio. So chances are good, if he's from Hamilton, Ohio, to get to Hamilton, Ontario, he would just follow that same sort of route, right? Like go up to Erie, Pennsylvania, cross at Fort Erie, Buffalo, but maybe Detroit, Buffalo, or Detroit is closer. I don't know.
And it just, you know, there's just such a large portion of the population that lives, you know, between Detroit and Buffalo, and that's prime haunt area, too. The Ohios, the Illinois, the Pennsylvanias are just rife with really, really big haunt fans. Some of the top haunted attractions in the country, if not the world, are located in that strip of several states. So anybody in that area, it's really not that far of a drive or a short flight to get to where you are to come attend this.
You're right, and that's a really good point to make, Drew. And I never started this, and I don't run it to compete with any of the other great haunted attraction conferences or conventions that are operating in the U.S. But I do realize that times are tough economically. I understand that, you know, you guys just narrowly missed running off a fiscal cliff there on New Year's Eve. And I don't purport to know anything about U.S. politics except to say that, you know, I know your economy's taken a kick in the teeth the last year or so. And, you know, every little penny counts. Like even up here in Canada, sometimes it seems like there's too much month left at the end of the money. And if that's the case, I mean, this is a shorter distance to go than, say, driving to or flying to Dallas or Columbus or, you know, Washington State. And I'm just wanting to provide an option, that's all. Right? So if you're living in upstate New York somewhere, or as you said, or Michigan, or in Illinois or Pennsylvania, I don't live in Hamilton. I'd live another 3 hours east of Hamilton, and I left home at I think 4 a.m, and I was in Pittsburgh walking through the doors of the conference halls at HauntCon this year a little after 1 p.m. It's just a matter of 8 hours or so drive from where I live. So if you could go from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to Hamilton in about 5 or 6 hours.
That kind of brings up an interesting point. You said, you know, the economy's kind of tough, and it has been for a few years, and the dollar is roughly equivalent to the Canadian. You might be a little stronger today. Who knows what tomorrow will bring. But, you know, people, when they go to conventions and they go to these conferences, you know, they're going to have to spend some money. They're going to have to get lodging. They're going to have to get food. There's haunt tours. There's parties. There's seminars and classes. What kind of fees and what kind of costs? You don't have to necessarily get dollar amounts, but what kind of, what's a good ballpark figure if somebody decided to travel from, say, a Cleveland or a Pittsburgh or something? What would be a roundabout figure what it would cost, not travel or lodging, to attend the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference?
Well, it's really easy. We'll let you through the doors for $10 to view the trade show, to see some of the special events, which we'll talk a bit more about in a bit, I'm sure. But stripped down to its basic lowest denominator, you can get in the door for $10 and see the trade show and some neat special events, but you're not going to drive all the way from Cleveland, I'm sure, just to look at some vendors on the trade show floor. You're probably, if you're considering driving all that way, you're coming for two reasons. One is to take the educational sessions, and two is to network with other haunted attraction operators. So I will talk about dollars. Right now, if you buy a seminar series wristband, that gets you all the educational sessions you can fit in on the Saturday and the Sunday, right now is only $100. It's $125 at the door. And you're right, Drew, our dollars are just about par right now and have been for months and months and months. So, you know, you don't need to worry about figuring out what's that going to cost me with the exchange. It's about the same.
Are you taking American money?
I would take American money, and I have a U.S. dollar PayPal account. And when you go onto our website and you click one of the register now or buy now buttons, you go to our EventBee is the company that we're using for our registrations, and you pay with PayPal or however you want to do that. But I have a U.S. dollar PayPal account. I love American greenbacks, especially considering I do make a couple trips a year into the U.S., and it's always handy to have U.S. money, so I will take it. But I would say that for our Canadian vendors that are on the trade show floor, they would probably prefer to see Canadian dollars. So the good news here is you could take your American greenbacks into any Canadian chartered bank and change them out for Canadian dollars before you drop over. Or you can use your debit card or credit card into an automatic teller machine and receive your money out in Canadian dollars to spend on the trade show floor or to register at the door. But you can buy in advance, and you can pay with your PayPal account or your credit card in U.S. dollars. That's cool, too. So, but it's $125 at the door, $100 in advance for a weekend almost of sessions. Now, there's Friday sessions like we have Leonard Pickle, who most of your listeners, I'm sure, would be familiar with, widely considered the godfather of the haunted attraction industry, or at least one of them, and literally a pioneer of the industry, who is gracing us with his presence at our show, and you can come and see him on Friday. That's an extra $50, but you can get the weekend session Saturday and Sunday for just $100 right now, and I think that's pretty inexpensive, Drew. So not in, because we're not as big yet as, we're still very grassroots. Our show, we don't have a week's worth of haunt tours and special events that are going to eat up your money. You'll probably want to buy a T-shirt, because you'll want to, nobody will believe you actually came to Canada. So you'll want a T-shirt. That'll cost you $20. Getting the door costs you $10, and $125 gets you Saturdays and Sunday. So I don't know, less than $200, right?
That's a deal at twice the price at any other convention in the States, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, I could say that I know that other conventions have early bird pricing that's really similar to that for the education, but some are certainly more. That's true, Drew.
So what other kind of special events, as you mentioned, are going on? Are you going to have like some hands-on classes, some demonstrations? You've got any social events going on?
For sure. We've got a welcome social on the Friday night. And in the past it was a welcome rally, but I think people were intimidated by the rally part and thought maybe that we were going to feed them orange Kool-Aid and then ask them to sign their life away or something. So, you know, it's not a gospel revival session. We've changed it to call it a welcome social. So it's just a chance to, you know, meet other people who are in attendance and to network with some other haunted attraction operators and to have a few drinks and just really laid back and social. And then we got this really cool body art competition happening on the Saturday. That's included in your general admission, not to compete, of course, but to view it. So I know that at other cons, they have something like that. It's sometimes it's a costume ball that you got to go dressed like in some form of body art. This is professional body artists who are competing. The theme is ghastly creatures, and they're competing for a chance to win cash prizes. So anybody that's at the convention can view the artists at work and see the finished product and view the parade that we do afterwards. And then we've got Nick Wolf from Evil Twin FX, who's coming from Orlando. I think it's his only, his second Canadian date, all this year. And he is, going to be judging the body art and painting on the trade show floor. And, we are working actually on something really cool and creative in the way of a haunt tour, but it won't be like in the U.S. where we get on a bus and drive 8 hours and stay overnight. It'll be more like something that we might actually be doing in Hamilton or doing right as part of the convention. And I can't say anything more about that yet. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that in March, Drew, but otherwise you'll just have to stay tuned for details. But we're working out some really cool options for that. So yeah, there's a few special events. Oh, and I wanted to mention, we get this really cool, you seemed interested in it, Drew, when I mentioned it to you the other day. Because Drew is a huge wrestling fan, and I know that in the U.S. wrestling's pretty popular too. And
we like it down here.
Yeah?
We do like it.
Yeah. And when I was a kid, I grew up and cut my teeth on the WWF, right? And Randy Macho Man Savage and Jim Hacksaw Duggan and these guys, right? The iconic characters in the wrestling industry. Well, there's a fight club out of a nearby community to Hamilton called Death Proof Fight Club. And they have asked to come and do a horror themed wrestling event as part of the conference. So we're actually going to set up a wrestling ring in or near the trade show floor. And we're going to have iconic horror characters facing off in the ring. And do this show on Sunday as part of the convention. And I don't have a ton of details yet, but stay tuned to our website. I'm really pumped about that. Something I don't think we've ever seen at a Haunters convention, and I'm hoping something people enjoy and have fun at.
Well, I've been at a couple of these fan cons and horror cons. We were at Scarefest in Kentucky a few months ago. I'm Days of the Dead in Atlanta, Horror Hound, and a lot of these where you have a lot of iconic movie stars and all, and we're starting to see an awful lot of wrestlers there. We just had Jim Cornette on the show not too long ago, and some others that are coming up soon, so stay tuned to the show for those. But it does seem that a lot of Haunters and a lot of wrestling fans do run in the same circles just because it's a cool thing to get into. So this may bring in a few extra people. It's really cool entertainment to watch, and if you're setting up a ring in or on the trade show floor, that'll be just something you can't miss.
Yeah. So, of course, we're going to video that, and it's going to be on YouTube after, but it's always better to be there live, right? Like, you can't beat blood splattering in your face for entertainment value, really, can you?
No, not really. What about Saturday night? I understand there's a sort of a VIP dinner type event going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm glad that you check up on my website for me, because I put that stuff there so I don't have to remember it.
You do
yeah, the VIP dinner. Something that went over very well since we started doing the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference was an opportunity for folks to sit down and have a meal with our convention VIPs. So in this case, this year, it'll be the likes of Leonard Pickle and Nick Wolf and John Migliore and myself and perhaps the great Drew Badger and anybody else. Everybody else who's considered a VIP at our show will be at this dinner. Now, of course, tickets are like $25 a piece. The meal is great. This isn't a hoity-toity white linens and real silverware type of a dinner. This is a down-home Alabama-type dinner. You know,
it's not catered by Tim Hortons?
No, it's not. And there won't be any poutine. Sorry.
God dang it.
We'll go out for poutine, but it'll be just like barbecue chicken and ribs and potato planks and you know, some really just cool everyday folks food. But
Canadian bacon?
Maybe. I don't know if we have that. Maybe yes. We'll wrap the sausages in it because we love to double up on our meats in Canada, right?
That's back.
So anyway, yeah, so there's the VIP dinner, and that's a chance to, like, rub elbows and pick Leonard's Pickles' brains one-on-one, right? How often do you get an opportunity to sit down with somebody of that stature, or Nick Wolff, or an actual actor, a Hollywood professional from the movie, at dinner and say, how did you do this, or how would you do that, or we're thinking about doing this, what's your opinion? It's a very intimate setting, so we only sell a limited number of tickets. It's not available. We're not going to do one of those deals like those celebrity golf tournaments where you might get within 500 feet of a celebrity, and if you have a real good zoom in your camera, you could actually get a picture. You're going to get to sit next to that guy for dinner. So I think that's a neat feature that I don't see it at any other Haunters conventions that I know of. But, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, sounds like a blast. I was able to attend that last year, and unfortunately was not able to stay the entire night because I had to drive back to Buffalo and catch an early, early flight on Sunday. But any other questions for Mr. Flagler there, unknown scare actor? He's covered a good bit so far. What's going on?
He has, and it's more of a comment as opposed to a question. But you guys keep bringing up John Migliori.
Yeah.
And I found out something interesting about him the other day that I didn't know. He was recently in a zombie movie that is due to be released this year called Revelation Trail.
John Migliori in a zombie movie? Perish the thought.
A Western zombie movie called Revelation Trail. And the one thing I have in common with John is the fact that I played a zombie on that movie as well.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Granted, I'm sure John had a much larger part than I did. I was just an extra.
Okay.
But I just found out when I was doing some research the other day, since they're getting ready to release it, that John and I were both in the same movie.
See, that's cool. And John is a really great guy, okay? I haven't had the privilege of meeting a ton of celebrities, so don't, you know, I'm no expert at that. But what I see and hear on websites and that is that some, you know, actors can be standoffish. They could be stuck up. They could be full of themselves. And that is the exact opposite of John. He is the most down-to-earth, approachable guy, one of the most genuine celebrities I have ever met. And, yeah, I know he's not an A-list actor yet, but I'd like to believe that when he is, he'll be every bit as humble and down-to-earth. And, and I shouldn't discount that we've got author Wayne Mallow's returning. Wayne is the author of a series of books. The first two are out now. The first one was called Whitechapel Road. It's a fictional vampire tale that has actual history intertwined with the Whitechapel murders in London that most people would know having been committed by Jack the Ripper. So he's intertwined actual historical incidences and fact about the Whitechapel murders with this fictional vampire tale, and it's an amazingly cool novel. And the follow-up to that book, the second in the trilogy, is called Mary, Mary, Quite Contrary, and it's just been released on Amazon.com, and Wayne will be at the show signing autographs and selling his book, etc. So that's a good thing too. But I know we're almost out of time, but I did want to just comment as well that Canada is not a scary, dark, unknown, desolate place. You don't have to be scared to come up here, and you don't have to be from Canada to go to this show. Our industry, I'll be the first to admit, is still in its infancy in Canada. And down in America, you guys have 15 to 20 solid years of experience, of learning. You've paid a wicked price and hacked a path out through a jungle that now you've paved roads and everything is smooth and makes it very easy for somebody to enter that industry who's new for the first time. But we're still not there yet in Canada, and we would really appreciate your help. I know how hard many of you listening to this show probably worked to be a part of the foundation of the U.S. industry and how passionate you are about it. and we're passionate about the industry in Canada too, but we would really benefit from your experience and your knowledge and your know-how. And if you're as, like I am, as committed to the growth of the industry, then I'm hat in hand, a humble servant of the industry, asking for your help, asking for you to come up and join us here in Canada and teach us what you know. Share with us what you've learned the hard way. Maybe spare us some of that same heartache. We would really be forever in your debt if you could see your way to coming up to this show, taking part in it, helping us grow our industry here. We would appreciate it.
Are you still looking for people to maybe speak or vend? And if so, how could they go about doing that?
Our educational series is quickly filling up. We'll always find room if somebody's really passionate on a certain topic. I'm just saying, Drew, that the good news is that we've had excellent response to our call for presenters, and even though the website isn't as up to date as it could be, we're about 75% of our speaker slots are full. We still do have a few available, yes. We definitely would be interested in our American brethren as vendors and helping you, because I get it in the U.S., especially some vendors. There might be 6 or 7 different companies that are all very similar, selling the similar type of product as you. And so maybe it's reaching the saturation point. But in Canada, it's the Wild West still. There are hardly any vendors selling specifically to the haunt industry. So this is an opportunity. It would be like going back to San Francisco in 1849, about a month ahead of the gold rush. Because our industry will flourish like yours has, and it probably won't take 20 years because we have the benefit of your experience. But imagine getting in on the ground floor and expanding your business into Canada and being, because we all know first to market is the person that gains the most market share, right? We all know that, I'm trying to find a good example. Maybe Netflix is a good example as first to market in that online movie thing, or for sure, BlackBerry was first to market with a smartphone, and even though they've struggled, they're still the recognized industry leader, although Apple's biting on their heels, right? So here, how about an opportunity to come to Canada and to vendor exhibit at this show and to be the first to market in Canada, whatever the product is you sell, and to be the establish yourself as the industry leader in that product line before anybody else has an opportunity to establish themselves. So yeah, we're definitely looking for vendors. We could use a lot more vendors.
And that kind of segues way into what we like to affectionately call the plugs as we wind this down. Basically, you know, if you are a vendor in the United States or in Canada and are interested in coming and vending at the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference, or if you're just interested in maybe speaking and you'd like to make the trip up there, how can they get in contact with you? How can they subscribe to your newsletter? How can they get all the information, and what do they need to do?
Yeah, good. You can send me an email personally to Matthew, and Matthew's with 2 T's, so M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Matthew@CanadaHaunts.ca, and reach out to me that way with whatever it is I want to exhibit, I want to present. I have a great idea for a special event. If you go to our website, CanadaHaunts.ca, not .com, but .ca, you can find links, you can find vendor applications, you can find buy now buttons and links to purchase tickets or whatever. You can find links to subscribe to our monthly newsletter. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference on Facebook. You can join us there. I'd like to think we've made it really easy for you to get in touch and stay in touch with us. We put out that monthly newsletter pretty well once a month, all year long. And so it's a great way to stay in touch with us is to subscribe to our free monthly newsletter, and we'll deliver it to your email inbox about once a month, all year long.
Well, Matthew, there is no doubt of your passion for the industry. And as you said, you know, Canadians are kind of getting just off on the ground floor of this. I remember hearing you speak last year at the kickoff rally, now social event, where you were saying something along the lines of, you have only about 10% the number of haunts that are in the United States, yet Canada's a larger country. Granted, yeah. you know, a lot of Canada is a vast, uninhabitable tundra of a wasteland filled with polar bears and moose, but we're not going into too many stereotypes there. But once again, CanadaHaunts.ca for all things Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference up in Hamilton, Ontario, is at April 14th through the 16th. Those are the correct dates, correct?
No, April 12th.
12th through the 14th, that's it. April 12th through the 14th, 2013. So you've really got about 2 months to kind of get your passport or your pass card or get all your ducks in a row if you'd like to make the trip up north and visit there. I mean, it's right along the lake. It's beautiful drive from Niagara. I don't know the ride from Detroit, but I assume that's fairly scenic as well. Once again, I'd like to thank the Unknown Scare Actor for joining us there, and maybe next year you and I will go up there and run a booth and watch the growth occur year after year. Once again, Matthew Flagler with the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference. I want to thank you very much for coming on to the Big Scary Show to talk everything Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference happening this April, Hamilton, Ontario. Not too far away down the road. If you get the opportunity, please go up there. Sounds like a fun time. I went up there last year, had a great time. Once again, this is Drew Badger, the Unknown Scare Actor, here on the Big Scary Show, and we are out.
Stiff Magazine presents the return of MonsterCon. Coming to the Greenville Hilton in Greenville, South Carolina, July 26th through 28th, 2013. MonsterCon will feature celebrity guests, including guest of honor David Prowse, comic and toy vendor areas, panels and discussion groups, special offers for local and independent artists, horror and sci-fi themed entertainment, the MonsterCon Film Festival, live music by the Graveyard Boulevard, Valentine Wolf, and others, anime, sideshow performances by Captain Stab Tuggo and Madame Maybell, late night entertainment for adults featuring single cell entertainment, and much, much more. For more information, details, directions, and tickets, visit MonsterCon.org. That's MonsterCon.org. Don't miss the return of MonsterCon. Order tickets now before it's too late.
Baron Miseraka, as we embrace on the Big Scary Show.
Such a chill, the cool moonlight. It beams upon your naked flesh on the right. I've got blood to spill, my time is tight. I'm coming in for the kill. Soft caress as we embrace, one to one and face to face, a soft caress, a tender night was made for me and you. What a sight, there's madness in your. Such a thrill.
convention time, it's time for you to start thinking what you're doing for a season. And there's no bigger convention than Trans World. I'll tell you what, building up to that show, the Big Scary Show and Decimated Designs are coming up with a great giveaway. Now, we'll be telling you more about it in the coming weeks. Listen to more shows, find out how you can win, get some awesome product. In the meantime, I want you to go to decimateddesigns.com, check out what's there, start hyping it up, put it on our Facebook page, on Decimated's Facebook page, and let us know what's floating your boat. Who knows, you might be decimating your audience with it after you go to Trans World.
Do you remember your worst nightmares? What is it that fills you with dread? Do you hear things go bump in the night? Well, it's time. It's time to face your fears.
Brought to you by Dark Spectre Custom Couture. Check out Nez's work at www.darkspectre.com.
Couture. For the creatures of the night.
Greetings, Haunters. Last episode, we talked about the first of the five basic fears, which was called extinction. This episode, we're going to talk about the second of the five basic fears, mutilation. Fear of losing any part of our precious bodily structure. The thought of having any of our body's boundaries invaded, or of losing the integrity of any organ, body part, or natural function. For example, anxiety about animals, such as bugs, spiders, snakes, and other creepy things arise from fear of mutilation. So you can see how a large group of phobias that we use against our customers is grouped into the mutilation category. On the next episode, we're going to talk about the third of five basic fears, which is called loss of autonomy. But right now, I'm going to make this a two-part Face Your Fears. And I'm doing this because of the basic overall theme of this show. We have been covering a lot of things Canadian, including the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference. And believe it or not, one of the COGA hosts of the Big Scary Show was actually born in the Great White North. So now, what I'm going to talk to you about is called Canuckophobia. You heard that right, Haunters. Canuckophobia. The irrational fear of all things Canadian, including snow, ice, hockey, the word aboot, parliamentary procedure, and wearing a denim jacket and denim pants at the same time. Also, people who suffer from this phobia have been known to burst out screaming at just a glimpse of Jim Carrey, or, if you know him, the haunt rocker Jerry Vane. Anyway, Haunters, hope you enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you next time.
Always remember one thing, Haunters. Everyone is afraid of something. As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following people and others. We'd like to thank Matthew Flagler of the Canadian Haunted Attractions Conference, CanadaHaunts.ca. We also want to thank John Migliore for coming and talking to us at johnmigliore.com. And we want to thank Amber Johnson of the Dent Schoolhouse and R.J. Hattie from Face Off Season 2 for coming and talking about makeup and giving us their insights into this must-have part of the industry. Jimmy Talkington and Thornweb Designs, thornwebdesigns.com. Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, at hauntaudio.com. Von Caron Productions, Von Caron, VonCharon.com. Screamline Studios at ScreamlineStudios.com. We'd also like to thank the Four Ghosts
Storm. Catch his ramblings at hauntminute.com. The Unknown Scare Actor. Videos and more. unknownscareactor.com. The Haunt Rocker, Jerry Vane. Pick up his latest CD, The Attic, at jerryvane.com. And Drew Badger, actor, trainer, consultant, and more. rabbitbadger.biz. Be sure to tell us what you think. Send feedback to us at feedback@bigscaryshow.com. And keep sending in those news items. news@bigscaryshow.com. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/bigscaryshow. Or on Twitter at @bigscaryshow. And you can find us on iTunes. Search Big Scary Show in the iTunes store. Tune in next time when we bring you the latest news and information from the world of haunting and horror. And thank you once again for listening. Without you, we are nothing. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and others. This is the Big Scary Show.
'Haunting. It's all dark and scary. At Thorn Web Designs, we know what you want, what you need, and we will give you exactly that. Since 2007, we have been providing our customers with the best logos, web designs, and more. We can offer to keep their image dark, scary, and memorable, not to mention fantastic prices. With clients from Nightmare Zone Haunted House and Wells Township Haunted House, we are ready to give you the spoke you need for web presence. To get your quote and to browse our portfolio, visit ThornWebDesigns.com.